This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
He's talking about this deck, and he's casually talking about how there's 10 dragons in it, and in my head I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, that can't be right, but there's no way that 4 is the right number either.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, also, he is doing a lot better than me and seems to not ever be stressed out about this, ever, at all.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's you.
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play ED. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, episode 223. It is Mr. Scotty Mac. I guess it's 223B. Mr. Scotty Mac joined by two of the most unbelievable human beings on the face of this planet. And if you disagree, I will fight you.
Holy jeez, that's a fight.
I have Jeremy Scumbag Toefield. How's it going, buddy?
Hey!
All right. And I have Jay Motherfucker Boosh!
Hey!
Trendsetter. Trendsetter.
So how are we doing?
Hey, you guys.
How's it been this week? How have you guys been?
I've been good. Been really good.
I'm upset that the episode didn't record last week.
I'm so upset.
Yeah, so maybe we should get into like
a
quick explanation.
It was like a good fucking show.
Yeah, man.
It really was a good show.
What a bummer.
Our primary thing actually cut me out altogether, it sounds like.
So our primary recorder only recorded the whole show, but it only recorded my channel. So you can listen to a series of pauses and then me chiming in. And answering something or saying something,
you know,
and then
I've thought about
like
offering that to people on the side, being like, "Oh, tune into my live stream where I'll stream us recording the A-Team." But you won't be able to hear the other members; you'll just hear Jay Boosh.
Yeah.
And just like I was thinking about that today, like how terrible would that be? Where you're just like, you just hear a series of pauses and then a rant, and then like a series of pauses, and then like I don't know.
And say, "Oh yeah, I know what you mean. That sounds great." No context whatsoever. And then Jer's, I think, cut out partway through. And
25 minutes in.
Yeah. So instead of offering you guys just 25 minutes and giving you the terrible April Fool's cock tease, we just called it a day. Just really sad because it was a good episode.
It was.
We talked about Jeremy's modern draft, which was happening.
Yeah, because we're doing one of those modern rotisserie drafts.
Yeah.
That so many of the pro peoples are doing.
Yeah. And we talked about some standard events, some green red aggro. We talked about all sorts of crazy shit.
We didn't talk about like green red aggro from this weekend, but
no,
we talked about like some other crazy concoction.
Yeah, which we'll talk about again later because it just seems
to
keep coming. We talked about the mono red deck in particular, and how you have to respect the mono red deck or you just fucking die.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. So
also, KYT's not here because he's in Cambodia.
That was the other thing. Yes, he's at a family wedding in Cambodia. So he's not actually at the Pro Tour. He was fortunate enough to defer his invite to the next Pro Tour. So he's not in Brussels. He will be in Vancouver. So for those of you that have been asking me, no, he's not a part of Team Face-to-Face Games or whoever it is this time around because he's not playing. So
like a bitch.
Team Face-to-Balls.
Team Balls to Face. That's way better.
Balls to Face.
Balls to Face. But yeah, so you're stuck with the three of us tonight, which is still fucking awesome, because we all did our homework and played some Magic, and or watched some Magic, and have a lot to say about Magic. Both Standard and Draft. Plus, it's a fucking Pro Tour this weekend. Holy shit. Holy shit, Pro Tour time. Yeah, I think it's going to be a heck of a weekend. I'm very excited.
Pro Tour hype?
Pro Tour hype? Yep. And Dragons is now legal on MTGO, so for everyone that's not on the beta, you can play it all the time, as much as you like. Just trying to find cards right now is fucking terrible.
So, not if you want to spend all the money.
Well, I mean, like a Thunderbreak Regent, for example. Okay, I've been tracking this card since the pre-releases on Thursday. It started at 6 tickets, no copies. Then it jumped up to 9 tickets by Sunday morning, still no copies. And then, sorry, there were like 2 copies, and I should have bought them, but didn't. And now, I try to find them, and the price on MTGO Traders right now is like 17 fucking tickets per card, and you can't find them. Like, it's so bad.
17 tickets, 0 in stock.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Which means by the time you finally, 1703. It's actually gone up by, oh, there's 6 in stock right now. Maybe I should buy my deck. Anyways. So, yeah, it's super gross. It's a good time, but there's so much happening. So, we played a bunch of Magic this weekend also, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I got to play some Limited, so I'm super stoked for that.
So, that's what you played at FNM?
Yes, well, yeah, our FNMs are limited. We're limited FNMers.
Okay.
So, yeah, actually, I got to drafted Boros.
Nice.
And I ended up crushing my draft, so that was always exciting. I opened up that Gleam of Authority card.
And, oh, that's a trap, I think, right?
You know what? I actually was able to use it to great effect.
Okay. Is that the X spell that makes token?
No, it's the 2-mana aura that gives the creature vigilance, and it gets +1/+1 for each +1/+1 counter you have on other creatures.
Ugh.
So,
okay.
My deck was like heavy on +1/+1 tokens. Like I was using like the Mistook Curins and like the little red dude that has the Megamorph to give another guy haste and Sandcrafter Mages. So I had that kind of stuff. I had Sky Captains. I had just like some random shit like that. And then like the deck at first was seeming kind of like really, really iffy. I wasn't super excited about it. Like I had a Twin Bolt. I had that Gleam thing. I had a couple neat guys. I had like our Draconic Roar. So I had some neat stuff going on. Managed to pick up like a Vault Breaker. And then in pack 3, I get like the Sand Step Outcast. So I'm like, okay, this is good. Then I get a Light Form. I'm like, okay, this is good. And then somebody passes me a Mastery of the Unseen. So I'm like, okay, life has gotten really good. And then right behind that is Elite Scale Guard. And all of a sudden I have a tournament winning deck.
Great.
Yeah. So it's amazing when a plan comes together.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah. So ended up just playing some like really, really savage games. I was just kind of killing people left, right, and center. Got to the finals. Did a split with Marcel because... just having fun, just talking with people and stuff like that, but we still wanted to sit down and play. So we do the split, and then I like proceeded to 2-0 him. Not even close.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was like one of those things where it's like, oh, this is one of those ones where I could have just made the play, but he was playing like a blue-black thing, and Marcel's also very good at Magic, so, you know, we just nodded to each other, and then I kept working on my Modern draft, because we were getting a lot of progress done on Friday.
Nice.
Yeah, so I did that, got some guys together, played a bunch of board games on Saturday night, so that was a ton of fun also, and we just got this draft. Well, we played on Saturday night, we played the XCOM board game, we played King of Tokyo, we played Lords of Waterdeep,
and we
played some Mashikoro. So, kind of a wide selection of just awesome games in general.
Nice.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Wild. So how did you feel about the draft format as a whole? Like, what did you notice were some of the changes to, you know, previously drafting versus now?
Well, mana bases are garbage.
Okay.
So that one's kind of a freebie. What else did I notice? It seems like it's a much faster format.
Yeah.
Black seems like it's really, really kind of can trump any of the aggressive lines and stuff like that. So,
do you feel like that's just because of the removal or because all the creatures have enormous asses?
Enormous asses.
Okay. Big black asses.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like the removal, while it seems like there's more of it, at the same time, there doesn't seem like it's as good. So it kind of makes me feel like rune marks are actually better cards now.
Yep.
What else did I pick up on? That's about it, actually. That kind of is my observations.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about, and were your opponent's decks good or bad? Like, what did you find?
I had, like, one player play kind of an aggressive... Like, my first-round opponent, he could have beat me if, you know, he didn't get some mana screw and stuff like that. He was playing, like, the big stompy deck, and he just couldn't make his mana work, and... Because of that, I was able to kind of sneak in and get some damage in on him and find some spots where I could get some extra beats in, go wide on him a little bit.
Yep.
Same thing happened game two, where he just made like a misplay. And from there, I was able to beat it up. His deck, he didn't feel like his deck was very good, but I thought his deck actually had some merit to it. So there was kind of that. Round two, I played against like the hyper aggressive deck. And the hyper-aggressive deck, I was able to kind of race and keep my guys back. Like, one of the cards that actually came through really strong there was the two-drop guy that gives my guys Vigilance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he gives Herald. Other... Yeah, yeah. Herald of Travolka.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that guy did a lot of work for me.
Okay.
What else? That guy, and then like Mist of Kirin and stuff like that, being able to like kind of block some odd things, and you know, Lightform being really strong, Heel Cutter being able to kind of keep the guy that's back, and then, you know, Mastery of the Unseen is just a house in those types of games.
Yep.
And then the third round I played against, I'm trying to think what my third round opponent had. My third round opponent, I just remember it just being kind of like a sit down play and be like immediately on my feet again. Like that one there, I finished the game up. I think I was one of the first matches to finish in that one. So I'm pretty sure I just steamrolled him without him having a chance to do anything.
Sweet.
And that's like the type of decks that I like to build. I like to build the decks that punish people. So.
Nice.
Yeah. So there was that, and then I did some drafting online when the new set came out, like this morning. So yeah. I put together a blue-back deck and blue-black exploit. Exploit is a very good mechanic, so I won an 8-4 already. So
is it a very good one?
Yeah.
I think it is a very good mechanic. The cards that you have are so strong, especially in black. They have the 1-2 guy that brings a creature from your graveyard back to your hand. They have the 1-1 guy that manifests a card off the top of your library. So they have like these little things that you can kind of do. The 1-1 goblin that's like the Festering Goblin puts -1/-1. The 1-1 flyer that draws you a card. Like there's all of these little cards that kind of combo up with the exploit. And the exploit can just like being able to do like a Sullungar Sorcerer to like block out this one thing. And then I also had like the guy who flips over for 2 mana and negates. And then I had the guy who mana leaps. So it's just like I had like these megamorphs and I had the exploit stuff going on. So I was always able to kind of make sure I had what I needed in my hand.
Yeah.
I don't really care too much for the faithful guy, the one man unsummon guy, but the drowner I am really liking.
Is there anything that like when it comes into play, draw a card or when it leaves play, draw a card?
There's a leaves play, draw a card. There's a 2-mana 1-1 blue flyer that draws a card when it dies.
Like in this format or in
cards? In Dragons.
Because I was going to say, like, that would be really good, obviously, with, like, exploit and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's in the same set, so
nice.
He definitely does the work. And then the Festering Goblin is the -1/-1. So I also had, like, the black guy who -3/-3s if you exploit. And it's really good because, like, white and blue, a lot of their removal is enchantment-based. So, you know, you see a lot of pacifisms, you see a lot of, like, the 2, or make a creature into a 0/2.
Yeah.
And... exploits just kind of like, okay, I'm going to blank your removal by getting these like crazy come into play abilities.
Yeah, I found that like exploit, and there are some super broken, silly exploit cards. Like the 4-drop 2/2 flyer that when you exploit it, when you exploit a creature, you get to draw two cards and you lose two life or something like that. Like, you get to sign in blood.
Yeah, yeah, like, that guy, the 2/3 sign in blooder is insane.
Like, that's so crazy.
Did you say that exploit is good because as comes into play?
Yeah.
No, it's right. when it comes into play.
It's triggered.
So you can exploit the creature you play. Absolutely.
No, no, but can they counter it by doomblading the target?
No.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Because the, so.
Yes.
Oh, so hold on, yeah. So here's what happens.
Yeah,
so you
no
play. So left. You play the creature. The exploit trigger goes on the stack. Okay.
Yeah, and then they can respond by.
And then what happens is you can then respond. So your opponent plays the exploit. You can then respond by killing their other guy, and then they can choose at that point to either exploit or not. So,
oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, so the scenario is you. So if they have like the creature, like Silumgar Butcher, for example, I'm like staring at a copy of him right now. So he's a 3/3 for 5, right? He's got exploit. When he exploits a creature, target creature gets -3/-3 till end of turn. Okay? So you have, like, you've got, like, a Noxious Dragon, which is a 4/4 flyer, right? And then you've got the Silumgar Butcher. So you play the Butcher, your opponent looks at you and goes, you know, kill your Noxious Dragon. And you can then choose to get rid of the Butcher or just not do it.
Yeah, because you choose the it's not sacrifice target creature, it's sacrifice a creature. So you don't actually choose what you're sacrificing until resolution.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But timely removal will certainly put your opponent into some tough choices.
Yeah, but they can't, like, you can't say I whatever.
You can't exploit. Get them. No.
I can't, you can't say I exploit guy X, and then they're like, oh, I'll kill guy X.
Correct.
Yeah, right. The only way that you can get them is if, the only way you can kind of get them is if they try to do an exploit with one creature. Like, if they're just casting a spell with it.
Right, okay.
That's kind of the only way that you get a guy in this spot.
Yes, if it's the only creature and you just want to stop them from getting the spell ability. Like, if they play the dumb Sidisi, which is a 4/6 death touch, and you just Reach of Shadows it in response to the exploit trigger on the stack, then they can't choose to sacrifice that creature.
Right.
To get the tutor. Like, it just does.
Right.
So. But that's sweet, actually. So you enjoyed the format. You felt that it was actually faster? Like, did you find, so you were playing Boros, obviously, as you said. So, did you find you were just, like, just wrecking your opponents before they could set up shop? Like, is that what was basically going down?
In some cases, like, obviously, like, Green's got, like, the big, big fatties all across the board. But I don't feel like they have the acceleration anymore.
Correct.
Explosive Growth is a card that's an exception to the rule. Of course, like, there's going to be cards out there that can get the job done. Then the other side of it is, like, you have black with, like, some crazy cards. Like, that 2/5 death touch, like, common is just mind-boggling, like, good. Like, that's a pack one, pick one.
It's a Naga something. Yeah, it's close to a pick one. I've been watching the articles from the article series that Huey puts out on Channel Fireball, Pack One, Pick One. So many times it's just the terrible fucking, like, it's just the rare. But he goes in to say, like, here's the next two picks out of the pack.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, the Naga is absurdly high.
Yeah, the card is absurdly good. Absurdly stupid.
Yeah. A 2/5 death touch kills everything and almost never dies. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 it seems fair.
Yeah. Why not? Nice. So how did you feel like the removal was? Like, the red removal's pretty good, right?
The red removal's getting much better, yeah. I didn't really have much.
Okay.
So that was kind of an odd thing of mine. Like, Draconic Roar is a very, very strong card. So I was very happy with that. I actually even took a little bit of advantage of the red. I got a Twin Bolt, so that card's good.
Yep.
I also was using Lose Calm in, like, my sideboard.
Okay.
And that card was doing some work for me. I like some of the stuff there because, like, Lose Calm has, like, this unique thing to it where it's, like, when you're playing against the big red stompy guys, they can't just keep back, like, the Mana Dirtle or the Little Dirtle type thing like that. Like, the guy still is very difficult. It's still, like, you get advantages that you normally didn't get before with, like, the threatened type effects. Where it's like you could threaten something when he keeps multiple guys back and be able to score some damage with it.
Yeah.
I'd really like to try it in, like, a red-black deck where you could then exploit it right afterwards.
Right.
Because that just seems really, really jerkish.
Like all the value.
Like all of it.
Sweet. So how do you, did you rake in packs for your victories?
Yeah, I got some packs. I think it's at that point there. Yeah, I got 6 packs for that.
So how'd you do? Did you open them?
I did. I got Japanese packs I took.
Yep.
And let me just take a look at my stack here. I had gone, let's see, the 5-mana blue-black dragon that's kind of boring. The 6-mana 6/4 blue-white dragon that's boring. I got a Kolgan's command or whatever, the red-black command.
Yeah,
I saw that. And I got a the red-green command also.
Nice.
Yeah. And did I get anything else so good? I got some random 2-drop green guy.
Oh, the Avatar, the green-green 2-drop?
No, the green in one, and he's got Megamorph for green.
Oh, the Den Protector. That guy's actually going to be pretty good, too.
I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah, so he's got Megamorph, and then if you flip him over, he Eternal Witnesses.
Oh, okay. That seems fine.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole cycle, I think, of, like, the little 2-drop Megamorphs is going to be super good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. So I played in the... I played in the preview draft on MTGO this week.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So...
people were complaining about that.
What do you mean?
Not specifically that you got to play in it, but more in the whole sense of...
it exists.
It exists, yes. Yeah. They did not like the fact that it exists.
Yes. Why? People, are you kidding? We live in a Marxist society, man. There's, like, no joy for the few, only joy for the many.
Nobody complains that everybody has beta.
No, that's true.
Yeah, but they don't see beta, or no, everybody can get beta. That's the fine part.
But they don't complain when they don't have it.
Well, a lot of whatever. People don't
who
know it exists.
Who?
Anyway, so there were
name
some.
Them.
No, there were Fucker. Some people. There were some people that.
That guy.
That
buddy.
Guy. Jason Ault.
Norbert.
No. No, that guy, he's not a guy.
Oh.
That's not a real.
The card person. Nexus yeah. had. The
I'm
card,
sure.
The card Nexus
I'm
and.
Sure.
Like
100% sure that Norbert is a fucking bot. Nobody can act that way and not just be a program. It's not possible.
Who's the guy who does the things with the jump?
The guy that does the things.
What? Jared that does the what? Who are the what now?
Willie was complaining.
Oh, Willie G?
No, Willie Edel.
Oh.
No.
And he was just like, how does it make sense? All of us want to play. It obviously works. Why won't you let us play? Why are these people playing? Why can't we only watch them play? Just That's let us play. Okay.
So all I can tell you is that...
they just want to play.
So
they
I
just
had,
want to dance.
So I unfortunately had a malfunction during one of, like, two of my picks. I had my... I would not let me select cards, so I had to restart my Moto, and then everything was fine. So my deck actually ended up being like a few cards off from perfect, I guess, in hindsight. At the time, I thought it was going to be really rough. I opened up pack one, pick one, Hidden Dragon Slayer.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's sweet. And then I get like peck two Ultimate Price. And I was like, well, I know that Black-White Warriors is a thing, you know, like in the Fate Reforged pack, and I know Black's got all of the bonkers removal. And so maybe I can, like, pick up some good dudes and turn it around and it'll be okay. So I end up with this, you know, 15 creature, I guess, sort of like just black-white deck. Like, it just didn't seem like it was super effective or anything. But, I mean, I had some good cards in it. I had the Herald of Dremoka as well. I had the Dremoka Dunecaster. And one of the picks that I missed because I couldn't click through it was the second copy. And, like, that card is really good. So that's the 0-2 for one white that has one white, one tap. Target non-flying creature, and so okay. it's actually very, very good. I had the Ultimate Price. I had some other removal stuff like Pressure Point and Flatten. I had a Reach of Shadows, so I had like a reasonable amount of actual removal spells. And then I just had like creatures that were just kind of fine. I had a Sandstep Outcast, which is bonkers. I pulled that thankfully, like pick two out of my Fate Reforged pack. And I got like a Gurmag Angler, and you know, I bought two copies of Marsh Hulk. I got a Noxious Dragon. So it was a fine little deck. I had some cards in the sideboard that I probably should have played. Rally the Ancestors is a card I should have played, I think, and I didn't. Just because I didn't realize that it was X or less casting cost. So okay. You can, like, basically fireball this for, like, 7 mana on late in the game and just kill your opponent. So I missed that. Yeah. But, like, I had some tricks and stuff, too, to make my guys good. So it's a bit aggressive, but at the same time, I was basically able to just punish my opponents for having not good draws. So I ended up misclicking through an Artful of Maneuver against game one against Graham and from Limited Resources, which is Graham and James, actually. So that was awkward. And then game two, I got 2 lands, both white, handful of black spells, and got just demolished. And then proceeded to, like, 2-0 all of my opponents after that. I guess my deck was actually good. I just didn't know it. And it was good times. We had fun. It was a sweet deck, and I posted it up on Twitter, and like I said, it was just a couple cards off. But, like, I had 2 Marsh Hulks, a Noxious Dragon, a Gurmag Angler. Like, the biggins were good. I had a sick blowout with Channel Harm, too, which was, I played into that effect. I played a Rune Mark also, by the way, because I found the same sort of thing about the removal. Like, if you're not playing against a black or red deck, the Rune Marks aren't going anywhere. Mainly your creature's not going anywhere. And probably if you've got a Rune Mark on the creature's probably not going anywhere from the red deck. So it was actually surprisingly good. And I had 1 copy of Graceblade Artisan 2, which is sort of the 2/3 with the Rabid Wombat Claws, where you can, like, just stack on auras. But 1 card that really impressed me, actually, aside from Hidden Dragon Slayer, because that card was the nut, was Champion of Irration.
Champion of Irration,
what is that? Yeah, so that's the 4-drop, and I think it's like a 3/2 lifelinker or something. I think it's 3/2, maybe it's 4/2. Anyways, whatever. It's this like decent lifelinking creature. And so when you combine that with the pump effects from, like, Artful Maneuver and then the bounce on the rebound back, that card is, like, really, really good, actually. I had a Coat with Venom too, which played really well with him, and, you know, getting a Rune Mark on him or something. And yeah, just, like, it was very easily able to outrace the opponents. So that was something that I found to be pretty sweet too. The Sibzig Icebreakers was a reasonable card as well. It performed better than I thought it would, but I think it's only because I knew I was playing often to sort of the Gurmag Angler on 4 plan. And so the Icebreakers are a black 2/2/3 creature. They're a zombie. When they enter the battlefield, each player discards a card. So what I found with that card, and I had 2 copies and actually brought it in against, like, the red-green matchups, because what I found was, is I was able to kind of, like, get my hand onto the table and then leave the red-green opponent with their, you know, 5, 6, 7 casting cost bombs in their hand. And just, like, icebreaker, I'm developing my board, I don't care about the discard because I don't have any cards, and you're discarding your fat bomb. So it was neat. And Mind Rot also, same sort of thing. I had 1 in the sideboard, and it came in for those matchups, and it performed really well too. So yeah, overall, it was just, you know, just value stuff, and turned out fine. But I missed a 2nd Dunecaster, which would have been insane, and I totally passed a student-teacher conference when I shouldn't have.
What's a student-teacher conference?
Grand Master's Decree or something like that. It's the 2, all your creatures get +2/+1 until it's a sorcery for 5 mana until end of turn, so it's like an overrun effect, but it is rebound.
Okay.
So if I had 1 of those, I think for sure this deck could have been like the nut. So, but yeah, it was good. I had a good time. 2-1's not bad. I continued my streak of 2-1-ing these things. Never ashamed. So, yeah, I feel like overall, the limited format is pretty healthy. Like, you're seeing predominantly 2-color decks. Anybody that's going into 3 is probably being really greedy, unless they're playing Explosive Vegetation and Evolving Wilds. And even then, like, the bombs you have to try to get. Now, the one thing that hasn't changed is that the Mythic Rare Dragons are still almost unbeatable. Like, that's just how it is. If somebody drops an Elder Dragon on you, you're probably losing that game. There are very few cards in the set that actually just straight up kill those bastards. So if you find them, you should probably prioritize them if they're in your color, because everyone's going to have dragons.
Yeah, lots of dragons. Lots of dragons.
Yeah. 80 minimum.
We didn't get there.
But no, I actually had a lot of fun. I felt like it was really healthy. I quite enjoyed it, actually. It felt like an actual normal limited environment. That's meant to be a positive thing.
That's a good statement. That's a happy statement.
It's a happy statement. Yeah, I'm pretty pleased with it. The removal is fair. Like, it's reasonable. There are, like, some pieces that are absurdly powerful, and that's great. But I think that, you know, there's enough combat tricks as well, which make, you know, combat math interesting, and you have to really be, you know, trying to understand what your opponent's doing. And I think that there's actually a lot more of that in black this time around. So not only do you kind of get the exploit mechanic, which is potentially super powerful if you have the right cards and enablers, but you also get to, you know, if you are playing your black cards with your blue cards, there's enough tricksy spells as well. Like, Coat with Venom is actually very, very good for one black mana as a removal spell.
Yeah, it's pretty absurd.
That yeah.
Doesn't seem very fair.
And, like, when you have those sorts of tricks on board with, you know, the good, you know, the good blue instance or good blue tricksy spells with Flash as well, then, you know, you can very easily put a deck together. So, but yeah, I was very impressed with it overall. So, it's a good time. So, Jay, so I've been playing a pile of Standard as well. Jay, you also, if I'm not mistaken, have been playing no shortage of Standard.
Yeah, I played one FNM.
Which is no shortage of Standard.
Oh, okay. yeah, I spent all of the remaining trade that I had. I think I owe someone trade, is how much trade I have left.
Okay.
So I spent all of my remaining trade on building Shaheen's Esper list, and it fucking O3'd.
Ugh. So what happened?
Well, I drew exactly zero digs in three matches.
Oh, well, that'll
That all went to three games.
Ugh.
So that was fucking sweet. That was my favorite thing ever. So, yeah, and then, like, I don't know, like, so there's that, and then there's, like, the whole, like, I don't know, having no fucking removal in your deck. Like, three Crux of Fate is not removal. Like, a 5-drop is not good enough. And then, like, ultimate price is also just not good enough.
So is your meta, like, super saturated with Abzan aggro?
Nope.
So what'd you play against, if you don't mind me asking?
I played against Mono Red, where he mulled to 5 and 6 and absolutely destroyed me.
Mono Red.
What else did I play against? In round 2, I played against Green-White, but not probably the net deck list.
Like, was it Devotion, or was it
I don't know.
Like, more aggressive?
It was more aggressive, but I didn't see a whole lot of his cards. Like, I would say it was a green-white aggro, but it wasn't Whisperwood
yeah.
or whatever. Or if it was, he never saw those. But that went to three games. He just absolutely destroyed me. Then I played... What did I play? I played a guy, he found us on some app called, like, Stitcher or Stitcher.
Yeah,
Stitcher,
yeah.
And he's been listening since episode 201. His name is Kurt, so shout out to you. What did he fucking play? He's gonna build Esper, but I can't remember what he played. He played Cackling Doom. He played Mardu Warriors.
Sure.
Again, just fucking destroyed me with his, like, bad cards that cost 1 and 2 mana. So that was super fun. Even with, like, 3 Drown in Sorrows, 3 Crux of Fate, and then 3 ultimate price, those cards just aren't good enough. You need Bioblades and stuff. I found my deck has no action. So I'm playing, like, a blue-black Fun Pleaser, or, like, a blue-black do-nothing deck that doesn't have the do-nothing parts in it. I would have to look at the lists side by side, or, like, re-listen to the episode where I brought all this up when Shaheen was on it. But I don't actually, I can't tell you right now what the difference between the two decks are that make them play so fucking differently. But they play, like, infinitely differently. They're, like, when I was playing blue-black do-nothing, I never felt behind or out of control. I was always ready for whatever, didn't matter. I was just do-nothing and kill them. And then in this deck, it was like every time they played a card, I was one turn behind or, like, couldn't do anything. Like, just couldn't do anything to the card that they had. Also, playing 4 dragons, but then playing 4 Silumgar Scorn is definitely not enough.
So, Shaheen was really high on Silumgar Scorn. Obviously, yeah, it's a great card to bridge that removal gap.
Yeah,
right?
It's a great card if you're playing more than four dragons. If you're only playing four dragons, it's not very good. Like, I almost never got to whatever ultimate mode.
Oh, really?
Like, almost never. I have four fucking dragons in my deck. Like, that's 4 out of 60 cards. How am I going to fucking ever do that?
Mm.
That's the thing, though, is that, like, the way that he was playing it and he wanted to play it, he didn't care.
Yeah,
he was
exactly.
just playing it literally as a force spike.
Yeah, exactly, which is great, except for, you like, as soon as your opponent goes to four mana, that card doesn't do anything.
Yeah, depending on which decks you're playing. Like, I think it's
if you're playing against the guys that are, like, trying to cast Ugin constantly, then great. Force staff is great. Our Force Spike is great, but Force Spike's not good late in the game. Like, we already talked about how Mana Leak is also not great late in the game, right? The point of that card is so that you can early game Force Spike them if you need to, and then late game you should just be hard countering them, but how do you fucking never draw your dragons? Like,
so I think that the mono red deck in general has just, like, it's so good. Like, it is so good.
It wasn't even the mono red deck. It was garbage mono red from Garbage Man. Like,
they're
from
all
casual,
garbage. All the mono red decks are garbage.
From, like, zero Stormbreath Dragon, casual, like, I'm going to play my draft commons. Like, this, I was like, this guy's really nice. I've played him before. He's, like, a super nice guy. But I was, like, and am still, like, super salty about just getting absolutely fucking dominated by that guy with a deck that should have been able to handle that. I also found that the mana in this deck is absolute garbage. You are playing, I think, 14 tap lands, which is, like, impossible to play in this deck. I was a turn behind on my mana constantly.
Wow.
Like, every game, I was a turn behind on my mana, which is very difficult when a lot of your spells have double casting cost in them. I understand you need to have, ways to cast your spells with the doubles, but it's very difficult when you are a turn behind to catch up, and as a control player, you don't want to be catching up. You want to be establishing control. You want to be slowing the game down and playing at your own pace. You want to be, you want to be reacting. It's very difficult to react when you have no mana. Like, it almost felt like I was force spiking myself.
Wow.
Every single turn, because I never had enough mana. I was like, oh, great, I have a Silumgar Scorn. Sweet, I have three tap lands in my hand, so this card doesn't do anything. Okay, sweet, I'm on turn four, I have three mana. Or I'm on turn three, I have two untapped mana, but, you know, it's not double blue because I had to play my one white-black tap land on the off chance that I draw my second black source so that I can Drown in Sorrow. And then they play whatever spell it is that I wouldn't have been able to force spike anyway, or I would have force spiked it, but then it's like a raid guy that they can bring back, or it's insignificant. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, I didn't play with force spike when it was a real Magic card. I've only played with it in, like, say, like, Cube and stuff.
Yeah.
But it just seems like there's a turn that force spike is very good. And I don't know what turn that is, but I assume it's turns like 1 to 3.
Yeah.
That's, like, the best time to use Force Spike, and I think that's the same with Silengar's Scorn. I think, like, the best time to use it is turns 2, 3, and 4 if your opponent is doing something crazy on those turns. But if they're not, then I felt like I was also just doing nothing. Like, they're like, oh, I guess I fucking try to put this, I don't know, like, Hammer Hand on my fucking Zergo or something. And then I'm like, yeah, I guess I Force Spike that. You still crack me for 4. Okay. Sweet. And then I found it very difficult if you're not playing mono red, I found Ultimate Price a very difficult card to ever draw, because no other creatures that you want to Ultimate Price are ever that, like, I guess that low, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Like when you want Doomblade, you want it when you need it. And then it's like, well, okay, they have Lions and Rakasha Death Dealers, so Ultimate Price doesn't kill those. It's either not on time for the Lions, or they have, like, something like God's Willing or something. And so I just, when I was playing Blue-Black Fun Police with, like, 7 main deck Wraths and then 3 Bioblights, which kind of count as those as well, especially against Mono Red and Jeskai Tokens with their Hordling Outbursts and stuff.
Yeah.
And Rabble Masters. Like, when someone goes turn 3, they want to be a little bit greedy, and they have, like, some play that they've set up where they want to Hordling Outburst before they Rabble Master you, so that their Rabble Master is, like, bigger on the attack. Or if they even do it the other way around, I guess, is better for them. So they Rabble Master, then the next turn they Hordling Outburst. It's, like, super great when they go to combat and you can Bioblight all of their tokens. Or, like, if you're just behind and you're digging and they go, like, Hordling Outburst, which has happened to me many, many times. And you're, as a control player, you're like, fuck, because you don't have time to look for Crux of Fate. Being able to Bioblight is super huge, I found. And wouldn't this deck not having Bioblight instead of Ultimate Price? Like, I didn't, I almost never found that Ultimate Price was a card that I wanted.
Wow.
It's almost like when you have Cruel Edict and they have two guys and you're like, yeah, I guess I get one of your guys and still take four. Like, there was never a time when they had just a Siege Rhino, or I guess Siege Rhino doesn't work. That's a bad example, where they had like just a Whisperwood Elemental and I'm like, ha ha. Or they're like just a Thundermaw Hellkite. Like I saw, and that's the thing too, is I lost to none of those cards. I lost to bad cards all fucking day. Like, I felt like my deck was draft commons, was how badly it performed. Okay. And this could be personal bias for sure. But just like, I didn't lose to a single fucking rare. I saw zero rares. I didn't lose to any mythics. I lost to fucking play two creatures. Play two creatures, and my deck can't kill you. My deck can't do anything. And then, the other issue that I had... Sorry, Scott, did you want to jump in there?
Well, so when you say bad cards that you lost to, like, give me some examples of bad cards you lost to.
All right. Is there a website that I can go to look up... Oh, man, TG Goldfish. Okay, so I lost to, like... Fleece Mainline, which isn't a terrible card, but it's also not a great card when they are stuck on two mana,
yeah,
and they can't monstrous it, and I just die to them having that card. Like, I don't have any bounce, I couldn't counter it because I had a tap land, and then I drew Ultimate Price, which couldn't kill it, and then I couldn't find a Crux of Fate, and by the time I had, he had monstrous it, like, kind of thing, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What else did I lose to? Dex. Metagame.
So Abzan Aggro or Green-White? You lost
Green-White.
Okay.
Green-White. So I didn't see a single Rabblemaster or Denizen. I did lose to a Singleton Monastery Swift Spear. No Heal Cutter. Every time they tried to dash the Mardu Scout, I was able to Ultimate Price it. Didn't see any Zurgos. Didn't see... I did see, I think, one or two Hordling Outbursts. This mono red deck that's online is like a fucking 1,000 times better than the mono red deck I lost to. I didn't see any Coursers or Death Mist Raptors. I did see an Elvish Mystic that I was able to kill. No Caryatids. No Genesis Hydras. No Pelucranos. No Teemer Sabertooth.
Wow.
No, yeah, this deck I just didn't play against. I played against some bad white-green garbage.
Sure.
Didn't see any of this Sidisi shit. Didn't see any of this Jeskai stuff, so like, wasn't this card I was losing to. None of my stuff got countered. Yeah, so I'm on mtggoldfish.com, and then you click on the link at the top that says decks, then you click on metagame, then you click on standard, for those of you following along at home. There is 17 decks in the top of this standard metagame, and I bet you I played against zero of these fucking cards and lost. I went 0-3-1 and saw zero of these cards. That's how fucking bad the deck performed. I didn't even see fucking Boon Seder. I saw no new dragons. Yeah, so it was like I said, I don't want to just shit all over the deck. Obviously, you play one FNM, it's not the end of the world. But, like, that's just very telling to me. And the thing that was really upsetting is, A, I was losing to very bad cards. B, all of these people are telling, like, convincing me how good this deck is without having ever played it, like, 2 weeks ago on the show. And C, I spent all my fucking trade for this fucking deck that is trash. It feels like it's worse than blue-black. Like, I would have rather just gone in with blue-black.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I found really difficult, similar to blue-black, because this deck doesn't have very many win conditions, and because all of its win conditions are legendary, so at most, best-case scenario, you have one of each dragon in play.
Okay.
I found it very difficult to end the game when I was, quote, in control, quote. And by in control... I mean, they were mana screwed, and so I got to actually play some Magic cards. It was like you'd play your Dragonlord Ojutai or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you either just never are attacking with this guy because you want to keep Hexproof, and so you're just like never attacking with it, until you can either find a counterspell or hold a counterspell, or you are attacking with it because your hand is full of, like, either garbage or it's empty, and you need to scry or, I mean, sorry, anticipate.
Yeah.
And then he just instantly dies, I found. Or you're playing with Silumgar, and Silumgar doesn't, like, win you the game. The match that I drew with was against that green-white list that went to three. I went to three games. I think I played it twice.
Yeah.
So I went to three games with it the first time I played it, and the match that I drew with was easily the best match my deck played. Like, after the sideboard, Encase in Ice was a fucking house, and I got super lucky and drew three of them in my opening hand.
Yeah, that card's, super dumb.
Yeah, so he went, like, turn one Elvish Mystic to my turn, like, untap, turn two, fucking Encase in Ice your guy, like, sorcery speed, so that you can't float mana or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, he went turn two, play his green white land, play Fleece Mane Lion, like, fucking Encase in Ice your guy. And then he went turn three, play something else that was just absolute shit, but, like, probably an Elvish Mystic type card, like a utility type card, and just Encase in Ice your guy. And then he was basically fucked until he Dromoka commands. And I was like, oh, okay, what
so
modes are you picking?
So you Encase in Ice an Elvish Mystic.
Absolutely.
And you want to know why you lost it?
No, absolutely. You absolutely bolt the bird. Like when you are playing against an unknown deck and you don't have a whole lot of options, like, there's no way that I want him to be able to fucking start ramping out fucking dragons and Fleece Mane Lions and,
okay, but wouldn't you just rather Encase in Ice all of those things?
Nope, I would rather counter those things, but I would rather not Encase in Ice them. I also don't want him to have mana to be able to pay for my four spikes that are bad because I only have four dragons in my deck. And I also don't want him to be able to pay mana for God's Willing, which I knew he had. Right? And he also has Dromoka's Command, which makes me sack an sack an enchantment.
Yeah, so you were still playing, let me just make sure I get this right. So you were still playing, like, Heroes Downfalls and Ultimate Price and Utter Ends.
Yep.
And Encase in Ice post board, the green deck still was a problem.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like you drew badly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I did draw badly.
Okay.
But like I said, I've said that a million times. But that doesn't the problem that I have with Magic players is this exact thing. If somebody asks you for your opinion on a deck and they already have formed an opinion of that deck, no matter what you say, you have anecdotal evidence.
Well, no, hold on.
It fucking pisses me off to no end. Like, the fact that I'm giving a 10-minute speech about my entire FNM, and that you instantly can reduce that to I'm drawing bad, I feel like,
okay,
I feel like, fine. Like, that's every Magic fucking conversation I've ever had. Well, hey, what do you think of this card? I think this card is bad for these reasons. You're just negative. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's not where I'm headed with it. That's not at all. I'm trying to understand, because I think that, like, I hear what you're saying, but a lot of your arguments just seem, like, super, like, some of them seem super counterintuitive, just given what, you know, the nature of things should be. That's all. Like, listen.
Well, they're counterintuitive.
You know what? I'm with Jay on this one.
Really?
My mouth kind of feels really weird.
Okay, hold on. Your perspective on Silumgar scoring is extremely valuable. I'm very glad to hear you give it that perspective, and I think that it's very nice to see it through both lenses. Obviously, Shaheen was super huge on the card, and I think that he was playing it in a way that, like, Shaheen's decks are Shaheen decks for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? They're very much like Patrick Chapin's decks. Like, Shaheen will play this controlled game until he creates, like, he'll create a window where he just, like, resolves a threat, and then he will do his damnedest to protect the queen. And you know what? It doesn't always work. He doesn't always protect that queen, you know, and he acquires losses as a result. Like, his control decks are not as bulletproof as everyone else's, right?
And control decks are built for tournaments. They're not built for seasons. They're built for tournaments.
Exactly.
And that was built for the week one Super Virgin tournament.
Yep.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about that as well.
So, and I agree with you, because, like, it looks super soft to mono red.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, like, Shaheen today was even saying, like, he upped the count of the sacrifice effect, which, if you'll remember from 2 weeks ago, I did ask why that wasn't in the deck in the first place.
And he was like, it's garbage.
Yeah, and he said that since adding that to the deck, his win percentage against mono red is now just above 50%.
Yeah. Yeah, so I hear you loud and clear. Like I said, the only matchup I was actually, like, legitimately questioning was the Abzan Aggro match, because I feel like it should be super good.
Yeah, I feel like I should have absolutely just fucking smashed that guy.
Yeah.
But, like, I was, like, where I was going with that story was that because I couldn't finish the game, because it was Silumgar was my win condition.
Gotcha.
I was just like, like, it was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it feels like, I feel like the control decks want Pearl Lake Ancient and not the dragons, or it wants more dragons if you're going to play things that require dragons. So, Lawrence Whalen, who is a local Magic player, who, if you guys remember from like 2 years ago, I was in a playtest group with him when Delver was really big, and I we playtested constantly. Like, it was a weekly, a minimum once a week thing. That guy. So he was at FNM for the first time in a very long time. He since has played. Him and his buddies have kind of moved to a different store because one of them got a job there, which is totally fine. I'm not saying anything bad about that. So they just haven't been around. So he was there on Friday, which was great because him and I don't always agree, he has interesting insight. Like, he thinks completely differently than I do.
Okay.
So picture any time you've ever told somebody something, and they've said, like, oh my god, are you fucking high? Are you a fucking idiot? That's Lawrence's and mine, like, differences. We're exactly opposite in our magic.
Okay.
But it's good, because, like, with the whole Mike Flores advice, where you're like, yeah, I have wing shards, so obviously I blow this guy out 99 times out of 100, except for that he's a total dirtle, hasn't ever heard of wing shards, and plays around it by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like, so he was playing basically Esper control. I didn't look at his list because I was like sulking, basically. I didn't get a chance to look at his list. I also didn't want to like flash his list to everybody. Like, if I say to someone, like, can I see your list? And they say yes, that's totally cool. But
sure.
First tournament of a week, and like everybody's like kind of being competitive, I don't really want to have a big discussion with him about stuff, because I feel like he'll say his reasoning for things, and then all of a sudden people are playing like almost pre sideboarded against him.
Yeah,
and I would feel bad about that. So anyway, so he's playing Esper control with 10 dragons in it. Now, wow. I don't know what dragons
has he picked? You don't know. Okay.
I don't know the dragons that he had. I know some of them. So let me, okay, so I will describe them to you, and you will tell me what they are, because I don't know the words. So he's obviously playing Dragonlord Ojutai. He has Dragonlord Silumgar, which I think is in the sideboard, and then he has Hexproof Silumgar as well. So that's anywhere between, say, what, five?
So Ojutai and the two Silumgars, okay. Yeah. Six, sure.
Yeah, sure, six. So then he's also playing, I believe,
the blue one that taps, like the blue Frost Titan one?
Like, he's playing Frost Fly Titan.
Okay, Icefall Regent.
Yeah, I believe for sure he's playing at least one of those.
Yeah.
And for sure he's playing at least two of the white one that is Wall of Omens.
That's Wall of Omens?
It's like, if you have a it's Flying Defender 04. And
That's not a dragon.
Oh, it's, but if it matters.
It's a Dragon Matters card.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a dragon. So that, obviously, then that doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
He might be playing.
So, I mean, he's not playing Sun Scorch, right?
I don't think so.
That's a white one, the 4/3 white one. Whenever your opponent casts a spell, put a 1 on counter on it. Game of life?
No.
It's like almost unbeatable.
I wish there was a way on Mythic Spoiler for me to filter by dragon.
Well, I have it here. Let me just send you this. And then you click here. And you tell me what it's got. Because this is a filter by Standard, in Esper colors, rares, and mythics.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay, he's not playing Deathbringer Regent. He's got those. He's got Icefall Regent. I don't believe he's playing Necromancer Dragon, but he... No, I don't think he is. He's probably not playing the regular Ojutai. That's too...
The Pristine Skywise might not be unreasonable.
I was thinking that he might have... I feel like I heard that he has a copy of that, but I'm not sure. But like you said, it might not be absolutely terrible. It's very similar to that Angel that was very good in its format.
Yeah.
Sunscorch Regent. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, put a 1/1 counter on it and gain a life. I don't think he had that, but you know what? Now looking at the art, it might be possible. Might be. And then these are only rares.
Rares and mythics.
Yeah, so he might be playing, like, uncommon.
Really?
I'm sure there are some, are there not?
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, but all the uncommon ones are bad.
And these are also, what, only Dragons of Tarkir?
No, standard.
Oh, standard. I'm sure the uncommons are bad. Like I said, with Lawrence, you never know. He could be playing fucking garbage cards. I'm not saying that it's good or bad. I didn't look, right? Yeah. But like I said, the reason that I bring this up with the 10 dragons, he's playing the sacrifice. He's playing the counterspell.
Yeah.
He's playing the land that gets dragons or Ugins back, and he is playing the Wall of Omens card. And he's playing 10 dragons. And his deck did A, much better than mine, which could be the draws. As I mentioned earlier, I drew 0 dig through times, and the deck kind of relies on dig through time.
Yeah.
And I also drew a very small number of anticipates, which was like so annoying. But anyway, but also, I feel like the Dragons Matter cards are a trap, and I feel like I can't remember if I brought that up, but I feel like nobody brought that up because they're like kind of glazed over for the how like hyped for Dragons the set is. But like in a normal set, when you have like Beasts Matter or Goblins Matter, those cards very rarely make an impact in constructed, especially standard, because you have generally the least number of those cards available to you. Like, nobody's playing Goblin Rabble Master because goblins matter, you know? Yeah. Like, it's a bonus, but it's like, it's not like, you know, it's not the same as playing, you know, Goblin Matron or something. Like, no one was playing Goblin Guide in standard because goblins matter, right? Like, these are just good cards you play just to collect. And so I feel like with the Dragons Matter cards, they are also, like they can possibly be trap cards.
I think it depends on the card.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just feel like with double blue, force spike, sometimes counterspell, if you want, like, when I was able to be like, flash my Dragon Lord Ojutai, fucking counterspell you, you're actually dead. Like, that was like the Delver blind flip mana leak.
Sure.
Because people knew you had a dragon in your hand that had hexproof that they couldn't really deal with. And people knew you probably had another counterspell in your hand, and there's nothing they can do about it. So it was very good when you could do that. But I found that, like, it was a lot of work to do that. And whereas, like, Lawrence looked like he was never not in control. Like, he was never afraid. He was never
well,
afraid.
Okay, so, like, Wall of Omens, the Flying Wall of Omens is a card. And if you're playing enough dragons, So 8 dragons in your deck is actually enough, especially, and with no actual card draw, okay? 8 dragons is enough that, like, 80-something percent of the time, you're going to have a dragon in your hand or on the field.
Sure.
Okay. For, like, turns 2 through 5 or something like that.
Yeah, sorry. Just for those listening at home, I just found it. It's Orator of Ojutai.
Yeah.
It's 2 mana, Flying Defender, 0/4. And then if you control a dragon or reveal a dragon, then you draw a card when it comes into play.
Yeah. So, like, that is super, super important against, like, mono-red. And other aggressive decks. Like, that's a huge
and
fucking
it, like,
card.
It gets out of Roast's way.
Yeah.
Like, they can't roast it.
Yeah.
They can still, you know, they still have ways to kill it, but it's, you know, I mean, you're generally going to 1-for-1 them. Like, you're going to block and they're going to have to use a burn spell, and you got to draw a card, so really, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's a very, very good card, and I think that by playing it, it sets yourself up really well for that matchup,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. And it buys him time, right? Which is what I felt like the Bioblight did in the black deck. Like, in the black, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Oh, shit, they reprinted Path Pacifism in this set.
Yes, they did. Yeah, and so that makes perfect sense, right? Like, I can totally understand him looking, you know, completely in control, because, I mean, those types of creatures add to a lot of the buffer for the pressure that he would be put under.
Oh, he's also playing Dragon Lord's Prerogative. I just realized.
Oh, that's the rare opportunity.
Yeah,
well, the rare opportunity.
But is opportunity instant as well?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Then it is. It's exactly just rare opportunity with the dragon claws.
Yeah, but the dragon claws just can't be countered, so that's somewhat relevant.
Oh, wow, that is relevant as well. And he was only playing one copy of it, and he was thinking of cutting it because it's very expensive.
Yeah.
But just, I'm, as I'm, tr- like, I want to try to be as transparent as possible, so
yeah.
as I find things. But yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I don't know. Like, if you come to me and you say, "Hey, man, check out this control deck. It also plays 10 dragons." Like, that almost seems like a sealed or a draft deck, you know, where you have too many 5 and 6 drops, and you're like, "How do you cut these?" And it's like, "Well, look at your deck. Like, can you play all of these?" Like, yeah, it's great to have like 3 5 drop removal spells and 3 5 drop dragons, but like, what do you like? How do you ever play these cards, and how do you ever not mulligan to 6 every game? Like,
yeah,
at least, you know. And that's what I felt like. I was like, he's showing me, or he's talking about this deck, and he's casually talking about how there's 10 dragons in it, and in my head, I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, that can't be right, but there's no way that 4 is the right number either.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, also, he is doing a lot better than me and seems to not ever be stressed out about this, ever.
Well, the other thing, too, is, so, okay, there is the brew principle at work here.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
And the brew principle is that you should be more comfortable with your cards, and you know why you've put every card in that deck.
Yes.
That you know what your plans are in and out of every matchup, just innately, by your choosing these cards for the deck. Whereas you're in the scenario where you're forced to guess by pulling a list off the internet.
Right, like, do I counter this spell?
Yeah, or like, am I bringing in Case and Ice in against Abzan Aggro? Like,
yes, absolutely,
like,
yeah.
I think all their creatures are green.
Exactly.
And what am I cutting for that? Are my counter spells
bad? Yeah, that was one that I had a lot of problem with, too. I'm like, well, what am I cutting for these cards? Mm-hmm. Like, I obviously know these cards are good to go in, but, like, are they better than these cards that come out?
Exactly. Yeah, so I think that's a really big piece of it. And so, to not taking anything away from his deck, but like that plays. Like,
yeah.
when you're commenting on his apparent confidence, there's a lot to be said about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but I think that there's a lot going on in the Esper color shell. And I don't think that you're going to necessarily, you know, just regret and vomit up, you know, oh, well, you know, this deck's fucking hot garbage, and why did I, you know, spend all this trade credit? But reality is, we do have a Pro Tour around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
We all know how much our Pro Tour players like to bust stupid cards like Narset for us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, and not to be super negative the entire time, Narset is absolutely as good, if not better, than Jace in Standard.
You totally agree with him, eh?
She is absolutely unbelievably good. Unbelievably good. And I rebounded exactly 0 spells.
Really? And she was still insane.
I rebounded exactly 0 spells and still fucking crushed. Like, anytime she was around. Like, I went 0-3 and she was still, like, almost single-handedly winning me games just by the fact that she just drew me extra cards. And then people were just like, oh my god, I can't let her ultimate. And it's like, actually, like, if I ultimate her, you don't care. You just attack me. I'm at 5.
Yeah. Yeah. But please, but deal like, 12 no, damage to no. my Narset.
No, I can't. I can't let you ultimate this. Oh. And there was times when I was like, yeah, okay, like, use my Narset, flip it up, play my other Narset, so that, like, instead of being at 7, my new Narset is at 6, flip it up to 7, see Narset. Like, yeah, I guess keep that.
Wow. Guess
draw that one, like, reveal Narset and draw it. And then, like, that again is, like, blind flip Delver, where you're like, yeah, so I have a Narset at 7, and I'm showing you another Narset.
Yeah.
Go.
And you didn't again, get a chance to rebound a Dig Through Time at that point? Like, oh, it's so exactly gross. 0.
Oh my god, and we went through the deck, and like, you're right, you're absolutely right, there was a lot of bad draws. We went through matches where I put, like, I scryed with Narset, well, not Narset, but like, with, like, using Narset, using Anticipate, using Dragonlord Ojutai's Anticipate, and using Scrylands, like, 15 cards to the bottom of my deck, saw 0 Dig Through Time. Lose the game.
Wow.
Yeah, like, it was very tough to sit around and deal with that.
Wow.
So.
Well, all I'm trying to say is don't give up on it yet.
No, absolutely. I think I'll play at least 1 or 2 more.
But I think that, so, it's interesting because at the big Syracuse Open this weekend, there was a guy, Nicholas Rappard, who made some changes to the deck. And you may like some of them. So, for example, he's playing two copies of Anticipate, two copies of Boblight in the main.
Right, okay.
Four Dig, four Dissolve, four Downfall, four Scorn, two Price, two Utter End, and three Crux of Fate. Still 2/2 on the Dragons, plus three Narset. Mm-hmm. The mana base is basically the same thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Sideboard, three Encase in Ice, not four. Two Nyx Fleece Ramp. Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
I like that.
I forgot that card is still on Standard.
Three Drown in Sorrow.
I think you got to go back up to four.
One. Well, I mean, he's got two Biles, two Boblites as well, right?
More Drown, more Bile.
More Drown, more Bile. he also has one copy of Virulent Plague, which is all token creatures get -2/-2. That seems super good.
You know the thing I didn't like about Virulent Plague?
What's that?
Because I did have some opportunities to play it. Because it's like sorcery speed removal, I found like
it's an enchantment.
No, but it's like sorcery speed in that like they play something and then you on your turn tap out to play that card generally. I found that like there was times when I was like, okay, well, do I just play this Drown in Sorrow and wipe their board, or do I play this Virulent thing that like, yeah, gets their tokens, but then they play like Rabble Master and they still attack me for two with that. And then it kills the one goblin token, but they follow that up with like a Swift Spear, and then, you know what I mean? And I wanted, then I was like, well, what am I keeping? Like, what do I keep? And then a lot of times I was like, well, do I play this? There was a game where I was like, ooh, do I play this Virulent Plague or whatever now? Because I feel like he has a Hoardling Outburst in his hand.
Or do you play it after the Hoardling Outburst?
Or do I play it after the Hoardling Outburst and get him? And I was like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to play it afterwards and get him. And then I drew Drown in Sorrow and was like, ooh, like, is that better? I feel like it's better because I get to scry. So then I just played my Drown in Sorrow instead, and I felt like the Virulent Plague should just be Drown in Sorrow. Like, it's not like Drown in Sorrow doesn't hit all of the tokens at the same time.
Have you played, is Jeskai Tokens a thing at your meta? Do people play that deck?
Sort of, but...
Because Drown in Sorrow is hot, steaming fucking garbage against that deck.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, like, they just, you Drown in Sorrow? Sure, so Stoke your guy, untap, Stoke your guy, my guy's to 3/3s, fuck you.
Yeah,
like it's just dumb, right? So a combination I think is healthy, and I think in those scenarios you kind of have to, if you've got a window to resolve Virulent Plague and not die, then I think you do that, and then it forces your opponent to be in a position where they now have to change the course of their threat deployment because their token cards are terrible. So then they start overloading because they need to overload on a board presence to kill you. So then they commit all of their non-tokens to the table, and then you drown them.
Yes, that's probably true. Yeah.
Like, I mean, case by case, but...
Yeah, no, that seems, like, super true. Like, that seems like a good plan, actually. I like that.
So, anyways. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is this Nicholas Rappard also played your one copy of Pearlake Ancient in the sideboard and one copy of Dragonlord Silumgar, so I thought you might like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then the Dragonlord Silumgar, for me, never came in. I just didn't know when that you would ever want him because of the non-hexproof stuff, like where I'm like taking your guy and then you're just killing him right away.
So,
like it's...
Silumgar, the Dragonlord Silumgar does a really good job of alleviating your how do I end my game's problem.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because your opponent goes, sweet, I've like run you out of rats. Great. See Drano. And you're like, yoink, kill you.
Yeah.
Or like, yoink, deal with this. You're dead.
Because it's not till end of turn, right?
You get to it's permanent. Until he dies, yeah.
Yeah, which is true. That is very good.
Yeah, and if you're playing against like any deck that's creature based that's not black, like if I'm talking more like the mid range decks and stuff like that.
Sure.
Like you're super safe putting them out because five toughness is like an actual like meaningful amount of toughness.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas like against black, you know, you are vulnerable to something stupid like Hero's Downfall, but still, what you can do with him in that short period of time is probably enough.
It's like insane. Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching not this week, but the weekend before. Somebody going with a Dragonlord Silumgar, taking a what do you call that? Oh my goodness, not Morph, but...
Megamorph?
No, Manifest.
Yeah,
taking a Manifested 4/4 guy that Manifests guys on the end of the turn.
Oh, Whisperwood Elemental.
Yeah, yeah, where he's like, he jacked that, and then he had the green mana on Morph it.
Oh my god.
He's playing Bug Control, nice.
Yeah, that was Reed Duke versus whoever Reed Duke played in the finals of...
Some Jobin who lost.
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was a Jobin. I think he actually played against Who did he play in the finals?
Oh, it would have been Reed Duke actually using the Silumgar to take Whisperwood from Jacob Wilson.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. Okay. Or no, it was a match before. It wasn't Jacob Wilson. Jacob Wilson didn't fall into that trap.
Oh, okay. Then it was whoever he played before. Sure.
Yeah, it was when he played against the White Green guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, Cranderson. Chris Anderson.
Yeah, against Cranderson.
Cranderson.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's wild. So, yeah, I think it's pretty sweet. And I think there's lots of play to the deck. And I know you in that you will do a fantastic job of reading your expected meta and tweaking the deck to make it good. And I know that I can tell you with all confidence that with Narset at the helm, the deck is going to be very good.
Yes, yeah.
That card looks really neat.
Really does.
I really want to play with a Narset.
It's pretty powerful.
It's a very powerful card. And I mean, to be fair, I got them for 35 and they're now 45.
Nice.
So I'm not, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it was definitely not my most favorite FNM for sure. But like I said, like it was still good to kind of play and learn and do all that stuff. It was just would have been nice to at least win a match.
Yeah.
That would have been
super sweet.
That would have been good.
Well, I have been playing a lot of green red.
Wow. Okay.
Like a lot. So
what type of green red though?
Well, so I've been playing a bunch of different types of green red. So I went to the GPT 2 weeks ago, which we talked about during the episode that got lost, but I played the more traditional, I played basically like Ross Marion, Matt Costa's list from the Invitational, but I swapped out, you know, two copies of Surok, the Hunt Caller, for two copies of Ashclad Phoenix, which I felt was a card that I really just wanted because I thought, you know, if everyone's going to be playing Stormbreath and Thunderbreak Regents, like I want a four power flyer that doesn't just die that I can block with or attack into theirs or whatever, right? So I had a sideboard plan of, you know, Xenagos into Dragonlord Atarka. And so against, like, the Abzan decks, because I was playing Rabble Master, right? So, you know, against the Abzan decks and stuff where Rabble Master is real bad, then, you know, and Boonsaders, and when they're all just miserable, I can side out into a more mid-rangey package, go a bit bigger on the ramp, and then trump over top with Atarka. So cards that, like, really super over-impressed the hell out of me were... was Draconic Roar and Thunderbreak Regent. Like, those cards are legitimately insane.
Yeah.
Like, Draconic Roar basically being this, you know, better Searing Blaze, as in the way that I put it, and the Thunderbreak Regent, you know, incidentally just kind of, like, leaking damage. Like, between the Roar damage spillover and the Thunderbreak Regent or the, you know, targeting dragons clauses, there is a lot of damage that's dealt very quickly by this deck, just incidentally. And, you know, having access to multiple copies of Crater's Claws in an already aggressive shell is just made that much better by that splash damage. So I wasn't playing Courser in the deck. I made some changes, and I cut the Boonsaders. I went to a list which is four Coursers and four Rabble Masters. It's pretty sweet. I will be streaming with it this week. I have all the cards on MTGO now, so that's wild. But we were, so Chris Van Meter in his article basically posted the 60 that I would play after my GPT. And it's just so funny to watch him kind of take that and then turn it into the green-red aggro deck that he ended up playing this weekend and watching how we did with that. So he did extremely well all weekend and basically went like 11-1, I guess, or 12-1 or something leading into the last round, and yeah, he did super well. So his deck was, again, Courser of Kruphix is certainly the right 3-drop in the decks because you need to fix your mana, right? You need to get your land drops, you need to filter your draws, and that's been sort of one of the problems in general with the green-red aggro deck. So I have been playing with some Atarka's commands as well, which have been very, very impressive. And that's a card that I've been really, really high on out of the green-red aggro deck, especially if you're playing copies of Rabble Master, because, you know, the Atarka's command being able to pump all your team and, you know, deal three or you know, stuff the lifelink from a whip deck or something can be very powerful. And giving reach as well to your dorks to block, and then alpha on the way back is also really nice. So, but I've been very, very happy with the Regent Stormbreath combo. I'm easily playing, you know, 4 copies Regent, 4 copies Stormbreath, 4 copies Draconic Roar, and then we'll see where the rest of it goes. Like, it's just been really, really, really impressive. Some of the sideboard cards that I've been seeing in the green-red deck, like, CVM basically went, like, full-bore ramp, you know, played Caryatids over Mystics, over, like, Rattleclaws, played 3 copies of Xenagos. Like, Jay, you made a comment to say, like, the deck just feels really, like, unimpressive, you know?
Yeah, like, it just, I was expecting when I talked, or when somebody was talking about and showing me this deck, like, I was expecting, like, oh, sweet, a red-green aggro deck that's, like, sweet. And then this deck just seems not sweet at all. Like, I was actually, like, scratching my head quite a bit.
This is not an aggro deck. This is green-red dragons. Like, straight up, that's what this is.
Right.
Did you get a chance to watch any of the coverage on it at all?
I didn't, no.
I watched all of it, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's kind of the thing. Just seeing how it plays out, like, between having, like, the Mystics and the Caryatids, it just has, like, that ability to ramp up. This is, like, a Xenagos plus thing.
Absolutely it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a unique thing about it, is that when you look at Xenagos doesn't zero in this deck. Maybe the turn he comes into play, he zeros. But the next turn, he casts Dragon Lord of Tarka.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the point, right? So it does require you to have, you know, some firm answers to a lot of cards. Like, it poses a lot of really good questions. And the card that I know stands out, and it's a card that that CVM was very impressed with, especially in his testing, because it continued to make the cut, was Ashglut Phoenix. And, you know, he's got 2 copies of Arbor Colossus in his sideboard as a way to block other dragons, kill other dragons, whatever. But I mean, like, I'm playing 4 copies of Ashglut Phoenix in my 75 in Toronto. Like, straight up knuckles. It's been very, very powerful. And, you know, in conjunction with, you know, Stormbreaths and Thunderbreak regions, you create this critical mass of aerial assault, which basically goes over the top of, you know, literally over the top of a bunch of the different decks in Standard right now. So, the Arbor Colossus and the Hornet Nests, I know that they're very powerful, but I feel like they're just not, they're not really where you want to be. And this mono red is so bad at punishing bad draws. And I saw that Chris basically made the change to go to Caryatids this week. And that was a really big one, because most of the green red aggro decks have been really high on Rattleclaw Mystic instead of Sylvan Caryatid. And the red decks, basically, you could see it, they were preying on that like crazy. Because Sylvan Caryatid is actually a huge pain in the ass for a red deck, because they basically can't, like, you can just chump a token or a 2-2 all day, and there's not a goddamn thing they're going to do about it. So Caryatid gives you not only a more reliable mana resource, because it's not going to die, but it also can serve fairly well in defense. And one of the cards that Chris played as a 3 of in his sideboard is Seismic Rupture. Now, I've been looking for a sideboard card to play against mono red or tokens or whatever, and the best that I've been able to come up with, aside from, you know, a couple copies of Arc Lightning and stuff, which is all just generic stuff, was Barrage of Boulders. So Barrage of Boulders is the one that it's a 3 mana sorcery, deals 1 damage to each creature you don't control. But at the same time, it also has this ferocious clause that says if you have ferocious creatures, can't block this turn.
Yeah.
So it has the nice side effect of not only sweeping up a bunch of 1-1 tokens, or, you know, X1 guys like that dumb Lightning Dasher or whatever the hell his face is, you know, if there happens to be a Mardu Scout that gets hard cast, like, you can clean that up. But it also is pretty good in the mid-range matchups, like the mid-range green matchups, where you can, you know, if you can craft your deck in such a way post-board that it's, you know, it's going to be really aggressive, then you can just kind of get your opponent down to, you know, whatever, 10, 12 life or whatever, and then you just, like, Barrage of Boulders, none of your guys can block, fucking kill you. Right? So it kind of, like, works both ways on that, but I just don't know if it's good enough. Now, I haven't been able to play, like, I was looking for 1 damage effects, and Seismic Rupture is a sweet card out of Dragons of Tarkir that basically says Pyroclasm all creatures without flying. For 3 mana. Because God forbid they actually give us Pyroclasm back, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, it's really important that Chris made the distinction to play 4 copies of Sylvan Caryatid. Because by playing 4 copies of Sylvan Caryatid, you can easily play Seismic Rupture as your go-to sweeper, and it will definitely get the job done. Same as Drowning Sorrow, right? But it won't kill your Caryatid. So we all know that Drownosaur was very good against a bunch of decks, but, you know, and so having the access to that sort of effect out of green-red is going to be really, really powerful for the archetype. So it's a card that to look forward to. Plus, having access to Roast is, like, really, really relevant, because now you've got, you know, between Rupture, Wild Slash, Roast, and Draconic Roar, you've got slots all up and down the chain with which to remove your opponent's creatures, right? Roar incidentally doing damage, Roast just being the most cost-effective damage ratio red removal spell we've ever seen, right? And yeah. And you add to that Wild Slash's utility of being able to snipe stuff fast enough and early, and, you know, the sweet spot of two damage. Sometimes against Heroic matter, the Ferocious matters. Sometimes against a Whip deck, the Ferocious matters, whatever. But ultimately, you know, you've got your pick and choice. So I think that's one of the reasons why green-red is sort of in this really good spot right now. But I feel like there's three specific builds of it that you need to kind of be prepared for. So, you know, the fact that CVM's deck was labeled green-red aggro, I think is, like, a very huge misnomer.
Because yeah, it's definitely mid-range.
It's definitely mid-range. And it's yeah, it's actually the bigger, right. It's like the bigger one of them, right? So it's the biggest that I've seen it go. It's very similar to what Seth Manfield played at the Invitational as well, and his deck was comparable with, you know, going big with the Dragon Lords. Then there's another version which basically eschews Xenagos and Dragon Lord Atarkas, and it plays, you know, Courser, Caryatid, maybe playing it looks very similar to Green Red Devotion, but, you know, no Nykthoses, fewer mana guys. You know, maybe it's playing Heir of the Wilds, something comparable to sort of what Ross Merriam was playing. Some people might actually even be playing Deathmist Raptor. So if you're looking at cards like Courser and Deathmist Raptor, that you're probably more mid-range, or more towards the aggro mid-range spectrum. And then there's another one, which is like uber low to the ground, playing Rabble Masters and Atarka's Commands and just like mono dudes. So there is like a green-red mono dude deck that plays basically like four copies of Atarka's Command and just gets you friggin' dead. So it's really interesting. The red-green aggro deck, not to be confused with the green-red aggro deck, is basically mono red splashing four Atarka's Commands. Because whenever you can find yourself in a position where you can, you know, play turn one Foundry Street Denizen, turn two Hordling Outburst, or turn two Dragon Fodder Swing, you know, turn three Hordling Outburst, turn four Atarka's Command, and kill a blocker, like, get wrecked. Just get wrecked. So, yeah, it's really interesting. The whole green-red spectrum, there's a lot going on there as well, and I think that it benefits you to be able to very quickly identify, you know, which green-red you're up against and be prepared to time accordingly. But, like, Arbor Colossus, I feel like is just this terribly slow, laborious, difficult card. I mean, like, the three green is really difficult, I think, but I don't know. Not a card that I think I'll have in my sideboard at this point. So, yeah. But Seismic Rupture looks really good. And Harness by Force as well seems like a really good place to be. So, interesting card that we saw out of the red-black aggro deck was featured on the featured on coverage from the Open last weekend. Was playing, like, it looks like a red aggro deck. It's playing four copies of Rabble Master, four copies of Swift Spear, three copies of Zergo Bellstriker, along with four Dragon Fodder, and then a pile of removal spells. But, like, one of the cards that stands out as a three of is Kolaghan's Command. So this is a red-black command, and what I watched this do all weekend was kill your Rabble Master, rebirth my Swift Spear, play it, go.
That card's really good online, too.
Yeah, so I feel like this is a card that I have personally underrated, but I guess the quality of Kolaghan's Command is determined by how good Wild Slash is in the format.
Yeah.
Right? Because if, like, dealing two damage to kill something is important, then this card will probably be insane. But I guess you have to build the right deck around it. I'm not sure that this gentleman did. I mean, it was pretty good, but I think we can do better. But the card definitely demonstrated, because, like, every single time it was played, it was a 2-for-1. every single time. That's got to count for something, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, it's funny because I was joking about it online. Online, if you target a creature and do the discard, it does 2 damage to the player, 2 damage to the creature, and the guy discards a card. It's bugged online right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nobody seems to be talking about it, but it is. But it's, you have to do it in that mode. You have to target the player and the creature because you're targeting with the discard, and it must be just coded wrong because it sees there's 2 targets, a creature and a player, so it does 2 damage to both of them.
Jesus.
Oh, man. Blighting on steroids.
Yeah. So that's one of the fun ones.
Yikes. But yeah, so I'm really high on the green red aggro. I think that it's a very good deck. I think it fits my playstyle well, and I feel like it's really easy to kind of flick back and forth. Like the teamer aggro, everyone would think, I've been a teamer guy forever, but I feel like the mana is just really bad still. It's really not good. If you want to play a good teamer deck, it's got to be low to the ground and get in. And I feel like the mana is just really hard on you to get that done. So.
It's so hard to race.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's so hard to race against, like, the lower to the ground decks because you're
hurting
either going
yourself
for, yeah,
so badly.
Yeah, you got to rip yourself to pieces with mana confluences and pain lands and fetches. Like, you're doing so much self-damage. And, yeah, you can't afford it. Although, again, I'm kind of with you in the sense that, like, those are the decks that I want to be playing. Like,
yeah,
really like it.
I mean, Savage Knuckleblade is still a hell of a magic card. And, and I mean, like,
Rival Master, like, can still take games out of control.
Yeah. And this is so, okay. So can we even talk about Rival Master? Can we actually have a talk about this? Because
it's like a $20 card right now.
I know. That's not the point. Okay. So there are 2 very distinct camps that are situated in Magic right now. And one says that Rabble Master is just continually unimpressive right now. And the other one says, Rabble Master steals free wins. So that's why I'm playing it. So, what's correct? How do you feel? How do you guys feel about it? Jer, what do you think?
It's both.
Okay.
It's 100% both.
So,
and
explain.
Why that is if it's stealing wins, it's one hell of a card. If it doesn't steal a win, it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, is that it all comes down to the point that when you cast it, does your opponent have a way to deal with it? Because if they do have a way to deal with it, you're kind of stuck with this 2-2 that makes these 1-1s, that doesn't do a damn thing on the board, that really looks kind of lame, isn't really doing anything. You know, maybe you've got something to kind of push it away, but then if you have the ability to deal with his thing to deal with the Rabble Master, then he's not really dealing with it. And that kind of sounds a little convoluted. So that's what it really breaks down to.
Okay, Jay, what do you think about Rabble Master?
I think it's absolutely underwhelming. I've said it before on the show, I've never cared about a Rabble Master ever. I've never cared at all. I've never been afraid of one. I've played many matches where they go Rabble Master turn 3, 4, and 5. and I care zero, exactly zero, every single time that's happened. And that's happened probably 4 times.
Wow.
And I just care exactly 0 times. I just always have an answer for it. It's a card that, like, if you're... I never play decks that don't have answers. I don't like decks that don't have answers like that. Right? So, I tend not to play those decks very often. Like, for example, like, I don't know, back in the day, like, playing, like, green-white or something. Like, I just tend to not... I tend not to play those decks. So every time someone has ever played a Rabble Master, like, my response has always just been like, pheh, you know, like just pheh, whatever, who cares? It dies to every single removal in the format and every counterspell, like the deck. And I find like the people just run that motherfucker right out there. They just don't even care. So. Yeah, I don't know. He just seems like I for sure would definitely not pay $20 for him.
Right, right.
Ever.
But like that's not the issue, right? So let's just say, for example, so I'm looking at it and I'm like, if my 3 options to play creatures in this slot in my red green deck are Rabble Master,
mm-hmm.
Deathmist Raptor, and Flamewake Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
then what am I playing?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess...
Is your answer not Rabble Master, or is Rabble Master the best of all of those, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it is the... I guess it's the best. Like, it just seems so fucking bad. Like... Yeah.
So, okay. So, here's my problem with Rabble Master. And maybe you can... Maybe this will help put it into perspective, and you can either, like, talk me off the ledge, or, you know, we can go deeper on this, okay?
Sure.
So, I believe that Rabble Master is an unbelievable game one card.
Okay.
I believe that it's one of the most powerful single cards in a vacuum that, if left unchecked, is very possible to just fucking win the game all by itself. Okay?
Okay.
But in game two, I think 90% of the time, it is the most monstrous liability one could possibly have in deck.
Right.
So, does that mean I should be playing it, or does that mean I should not be playing it? I don't know.
Ugh, I don't know. And, like, that's the thing, is I've never had that experience with it. I've never had someone play it in game one, even, and me care about it somehow. Yeah, I just don't know. It just doesn't seem like it's that good to me. I don't know. It's interesting. I've just never cared a single time about that card. Not one.
All right.
I mean, like, I guess the issue, too, is that, like, even the green decks that don't really have an... Like, they don't have an answer to it in that, like, they can remove it. They still have, like, just blockers. Like, they just block that card.
Right, but if I... Okay, so if I have a Rabble Master on turn two off an Elvish Mystic... Okay?
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's very good.
I'm right, and I attack with a goblin, I get in for one, right?
Yeah.
So then it untaps, and you play a Corsair Crucifix. Okay?
Yes.
And then I attack with my Rabble Master and two tokens.
Yeah.
Where do you put that Corsair Crucifix?
Yeah, probably just block your Rabble Master.
Sweet. Okay. So those two tokens are still alive, they deal another two damage, that's three damage that I've dealt out of a card, plus I've killed your Corsair.
Yeah.
And God knows how much damage those extra tokens are going to continue to do. Or chump blocks, or life points that they're going to save me.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I just have never actually seen that happen.
Okay.
Like, on paper, that actually does make sense.
Yeah.
But that I've just never, ever seen that happen.
Okay.
I've always seen it been like, yeah, play this Rabble Master. Like, okay, well, it dies, and you didn't do anything with it, and I'm moving on. I'm moving on with my life. Like,
that's right.
I don't know, given the three drops that you mentioned, like, yeah, maybe it is the best one. It's almost like, wasn't there a card a couple years ago, or a card a year ago that was like that, where it was like, this card is not very good, but it's like, but you have to play it, because, was it maybe, it can't have been Pack Rat, because Pack Rat is a very good card. I'm trying to think of, like, what it was, but I seem to remember having this conversation, where it was like, well, what else do you play? And it's like, well, ugh, there's not really anything else you play, so you do play this card, but you just play it with the understanding that...
It's easily the worst card in your deck.
It's easily, yes, exactly. Okay. It's easily the worst card in your deck, but that's fine, you just, as long as you have that, like, understanding.
I guess, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
No, I hear you. Yeah, it's tough, right? Like, so I was really super impressed with it all weekend when I played at the GPT, because I had my fair share of turn two Rabble Masters, but, like, I almost always was just cutting it post board, right? Yes. Like, it was always the first four cards, almost always the first four cards to come out, unless I was playing against control,
yeah.
Right? In which case I'm like, I would happily play a Rabble Master and fucking lean on a Rabble Master and continue to damage it.
Yeah, and the thing, too, is that, like, I guess that, like, I'm kind of biased in that, like, if you, maybe it was Thoughtseize, where it's like, if there's a card in your deck that you just, every match, it seems like you're sideboarding it out, to me, that card is just not in your deck.
So, okay, so...
Like, you just not play that card.
So the problem is that it very much plays into the post-board mentality. So I show somebody a Rabble Master game one, okay?
Yeah.
And they're going to start bringing in Wild Slashes.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to side the Rabble Masters out, and I'm going to bring in more durable threats that don't die to Wild Slash.
Sure.
Hoping to make your removal and your sideboard choices basically terrible, and I'll kill you that way.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why I have it in my game one deck.
Right. Which makes sense, I suppose, right?
Right? And then maybe, just maybe, it happens to be absurdly good in that matchup. Like, mm-hmm. against control.
Like, if you get lucky, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Then yeah. you just leave it in.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yep, this card goes unanswered, I win the game. Okay, let's go. So, I don't know. It's tough, right? Like, this is the biggest problem that I'm having right now with my build, is understanding whether or not I want to pro or against Rebel Master.
Right.
So, it's... I value your feedbacks, which is why I asked the question.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just, it's definitely better than the Phoenix and the Raptor, but it's, like, not, it's still just not exciting.
No.
It's one of those cards where you're just like, are you playing red? Yeah. Okay, well then you're playing this card. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, like, we've seen it happen, and you know what I think it is? I think it's, are you playing Elvish Mystic and Mountains?
Yeah.
Because if you are, you should probably put the Dream Team together.
Yeah.
Right? And because, like, there will be times where you're turn two on the play, Rabble Master hit you for one.
Yep. And that's, like, very, as a control player, like, I can see how that can be stressful.
Yeah. Well, especially since then, like, you have to spend your, you have to spend your turn dealing with that.
Yes.
Or you're going to take a shit ton and then drown me.
Yeah.
Right? But then by that time, I've then, if you do deal with that, then it leaves me 4 mana to resolve a good threat.
Yes.
Like a Thunderbreak Regent.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, so that's sort of like the nuances of the control matchup in general. But yeah, okay. Well, I'm gonna stream. So I'm streaming green red aggro from now until basically GP Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll actually have to do. I'll do a couple dragons drafts. I was given 2 draft sets for my wins for the preview stream.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do 2 drafts for sure, and. Otherwise, I think I'm just going to jam a pile of green-red. And I got a bunch of different cards and figuring out what you want. It's kind of tough because the cards, I think, kind of naturally lend themselves together in some scenarios. So, for example, like Rattleclaw Mystic, right, can be very good because you can attack with it. It can trade with a Goblin Rabble Master, which is a trade where you make all day, right? But if you're playing, like, Ashclaw Phoenixes and Deathmist Raptors, then you are totally playing Rattleclaw Mystics.
Right.
Because the extra, because then it makes like him as a late game draw potentially good because you like play a morph him and you get 3 fucking Deathmist Raptors out of the graveyard.
For yeah, example. Yeah,
right. Or you know, so or you're playing cards like maybe you want your mana guys to be a bit more reliable because maybe you're going a bit higher up the curve, so you want to play Sylvan Caryatids, you know, because you're playing Xenagoses and Dragonlord Atarkas or something.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah.
So many choices. So many choices. I don't know. We'll see. I definitely was, like, super happy with my version of red-green leading into this weekend. So,
yeah.
So I think that I'll just start with that and then see how it plays against the metagame.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited. I may actually head out to a GPT on Sunday if I can make it, because I have very few opportunities to do so before Toronto.
Yeah, and they are good practice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they certainly are that. So, I don't know. I'm hoping that things go well. I'm hoping Toronto goes well. I'm hoping I can at least day 2 that shit.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
Yep. Run it back. We have the Pro Tour this weekend. Are you going to watch the coverage at all?
Nope. Probably not.
it's a dumb question. We've been through that one before.
Yes, many times.
Yep. No bar, no friends to watch with. Will not watch.
Correct. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, I might, like, catch up on some, I don't know, like, updates on Twitter. That's always, you know, interesting
yep.
stuff. I enjoy hearing about it, I guess, better from you guys than from... watching it, it's like getting the highlights, you know?
Yeah.
It's I don't know, easier for me to understand because I'm only getting the relevant details, you know? I'm not, like, I don't have to watch 12 hours of coverage to see the, I don't know, one match I care about or something. So,
Yeah,
I probably won't watch any of it, but at the same time, you know, whatever, maybe if it strikes my fancy. What do I have going on this weekend? I think, oh, no, this weekend I will be in Banff for Megan's birthday. Yeah, we are going to Banff to have a little weekend getaway. Yeah, so...
That's exciting.
Unfortunately, yeah, I guess that answers that question. I won't even be able to watch it if I want to. So... and then, like, just kind of... I don't know, we cubed on the weekend with a group of new people kind of thing, like the new group. It's like the young new group.
That's always good.
Yeah, so, like, that's fun. And we actually, the thing with the young new group is that, like, they're really eager. Like, they like talking about stuff, and their opinions are not so set in stone yet. So, like, when they make suggestions or talk or whatever, it, like, it's, like, I don't know, it's more constructive, even if they're saying things I don't agree with, I guess. So we talked a lot about, like, how good are, like, conspiracies, and, like, when do you pass? It was, like, somebody got a, it started with somebody getting a power play as a fourth pick.
Okay.
So power play is the, just so everyone at home is following along, is the conspiracy that, allows you to go first. So you basically, you just win the die roll. Now, we do play it that you go first every game, no matter what. I know some people probably play it not like that. I don't know if that, I mean, if they do, or if they only play, like, some people play, like, you only go first, like, game one kind of thing.
Yeah. But you play it even if you, like, win game one.
Yep. You just, when you have power play, you always go first. So we talked about how, like, how insane that is in, like, an aggro deck. And then everyone was like, oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, that's crazy. But then I wasn't playing aggro, so, like, you know, that's why I didn't take it. And then we were talking about, like, and then, like, without me even saying it, they were like, well, but I guess, like, it would even be good in, like, a control or, like, a mid-range deck because you're stopping, like, those annoying people from, like, always going first and getting you, right? Like, if you're the control deck, you don't want the aggro deck automatically going first all the time. That's super annoying to have to deal with.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, exactly. Like, power play is a very good card. And then I was talking about how, you know, what I found with conspiracy cards in general, not just the conspiracies, mostly the conspiracies, but with some of the conspiracy, just in general, just the cards, is that if you played conspiracy, then, like, you know that you never pass a conspiracy. If you didn't play conspiracy, then unanimously almost, it seems as though you don't care about those at all. Like, you pass them constantly kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's interesting, like, when to notice that is that, like, I don't know how much conspiracy you played. But
I played a bunch, yeah.
Yeah, like, I played a fair amount of it. And, like, I don't know if you agree, but in my experience, yeah, if you opened any... It was almost, like, any conspiracy at all. The worst one being the Birds of Paradise one, and even that one was good. Any conspiracy, you just took it constantly.
Yep.
Because they were that good. And it's a little bit more difficult to, I guess, relate to that in a cube setting, because it's very difficult to say, like, well, do I take this backup plan, or do I take fucking Jace the Mind Sculptor, or do I take Frost Titan or Grave Titan over this thing that gives a creature +1/+1?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's very difficult to put that in, like, in terms. Plus, like, you look at it and you say, well, like, well, do I want to pass a fucking Grave Titan to someone so that, like, one of my creatures can have a +1/+1 counter? That seems bad. And then they also, I found a lot of times, you'll look at it and you'll say, well, I don't have something that goes with this right now. So you'll look at something that says, like, target creature gains haste. Or not target creature, but just the named creature gains haste.
Yeah,
right? And, or, like, the named creature gets +1/+1. Or you can cast a spell. Double Stroke is one that people pass a lot. And Double Stroke is very fucking powerful. But they will pass it a lot, like, because they'll see it third pick or fourth pick or even after the first pack, and maybe they don't have a lot of instants and sorceries. And they'll be like, well, I didn't really have anything for it, so I just figured, like, you know, like why take that, I guess? Like, why wouldn't I just take a card that I know is good or that I know is real? And it's like, well, you know, your deck will probably play instants and sorceries. Like, you'll probably find at least one. And it's probably good enough that if you're playing it, you probably want two of them. And even if, like, if it, well, let's say it's like Swords to Plowshares, and they have one creature and you have one creature, you don't have to double stroke it. Right?
Right.
You can choose not to path your own guy. So it's like, and that's worst case scenario. But best case scenario, maybe later you pick up Bribery, or you pick up Plow Under, or you pick up even just Lightning Bolt, or, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
These cards become so much better when you are doubling them up.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. We had a really good talk about that, which I thought was, like, really great, because it was almost like we were trying to get the new players to understand that, like, not necessarily, like you're wrong, I'm right, take conspiracies, but just, like, to respect them a little bit more.
Okay.
Because they saw, like the guy that went 3-0 had power play. And he definitely won a lot of his, not a lot of his games, but on the back of that card, in that, you know, I didn't win it single-handedly, but the fact that he was playing a deck that, when he went first, like, was very good. You know, he was playing a red-black, not necessarily an aggro version, but it was like an aggro mid-range, I would say. You know? So him going first and being able to, like, Thoughtseize or Duress you or play a hasty one-drop, you know, was very relevant. And then him having things like Wrenchmind, Mind Twist, him to Turok, Lightning Bolt, things like that, being able to play those a turn before the other guy can, are, like, very relevant. And it's, like, there's a lot of times where you don't want to untap into a creature or a Planeswalker and play him to Turok, you know? You're not dealing with their immediate threat. But then you feel if you didn't play that right away, then it's losing value. You don't want to play it when they have three cards in hand.
Yeah.
And they just keep getting to play threats. But being able to go first every time and being like, Wrench Mind you, which is basically him to Turok, like, you're fucking dead.
Yeah, it's super good. Yeah.
You know, and being able to play your tap lands on turn one always without fear is, like, also super good. Like, that's that's like a very little thing that gives you just that much of an advantage over your opponent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we talked about that, and then I like that. I really enjoyed like having a conversation like that and seeing what their opinions were. Mm-hmm. We talked about, like, the +1/+1 counter and how that's, like, not an exciting card on paper, right? It's just like, oh, give a guy, like, 1/1, like, who cares about that? But then it was really good. It was almost like a podcast discussion. Once we got into it, we talked about, like, how the very, like, the obvious creatures that are, like, the best on are persist creatures, which there are a few in the cube, and the best one being Glenelendra Archmage, and which, you know, for the listeners at home, is it's a creature 2/2 flyer, and it has persist, so when it dies, it comes back with a -1/-1 counter, and it has an activated ability of just single blue, negate, like, sacrifice this creature to negate.
Yeah.
So you have a 2/2 flyer, you sack it, you get a 1/1 flyer back, because it has persist, so it's effectively 2 negates for 4 mana on a body, but with persist, because it's -1/-1 counters, when you have a 1/1 counter on it, they cancel each other out. And persist says, as long as it doesn't have a -1/-1 counter on it, bring it back with a -1/-1 counter on. So you basically, if you can get that, you have a negate lock for the rest of the game. They can place creatures, but they will basically never be able to play another spell.
Yeah.
And you don't have to ever play anything ever again because it's a 2/2 flyer.
Yeah.
So that's very obvious. You know, Goblin Guide, Itzamaru, cards like that. Those are very obvious things that are still very good. Like, and again, it's like Double Stroke where you say, well, you're going to play a card. You know, you're going to have creatures in your deck probably. So if a creature is good enough to play, is it not good enough to just play if it was 1/1 bigger? And so you look at things like, well, why are you getting these last couple of picks? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know. I was just taking cards that are better than it. And you realize, like, over time, these cards are versatile, which makes them good. They're not flashy, but because of their versatility,
yeah,
they're better. And then we talked about cards that maybe it's not the most obvious choice, but that it's still very good. So things like, we talked about, like, Brimaz. Brimaz is fine by himself, right? He's a good creature by himself.
Yeah.
But he is very vulnerable. He dies to red removal, like, not all of it, but a fair bit of it. And he dies to every black spell. But we talked about how him being a 4-5 versus him being a 3-4 is a really big jump.
Yeah.
And then we talked about, like, just little things like that. Like, just the differences in, like, I guess, like, Thragtusk being a 6-4 instead of a 5-3. Right? Like, cards like that, where you're like, wow, like, yeah, like, you wouldn't think, okay, this card needs, you know, a 1-1 counter on it, but at the same time, like, just that, just the fact that it's 1-1 bigger makes it, like, that much scarier.
Yeah.
Like, that much scarier. And then we talked about things like Pack Rat. Because you're making a copy of Pack Rat, it actually is bonkers on Pack Rat, because your copies get the counter as well.
Wow.
So, you know, like, that's, like, ridiculous. But people don't think of that because they don't, like, when you're in your mind, you're not thinking Pack Rat makes copies of Pack Rat, which get 1-1 counters. You're just thinking, you know, Pack Rat's already good enough, this card, whatever, blah de blah. So, like, things like that are super relevant. Yeah, so that was, like, really good. We did that on Sunday because we couldn't play D&D, so instead we did that, and it was fun, you know?
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. I caught about half of that.
Nice.
I'm sorry, listeners. My daughter just threw up everywhere. So I had to go up there and save the day. Because if there's one thing my wife can't handle, it's puke.
Ugh.
Yeah.
How is she with poop, though?
Poop is fine. Poop is easy.
Speaking of poop.
Jeez.
Oh, God, do we have poop stories this week? Because we didn't say them last week. Please tell me yes.
Well, we had some poop stories that we said, but they never got shared.
Yeah, so we need to.
So I feel like we could tell those again.
Do you want to run through them again? Do you think they'll be just as good the second time around?
Yeah, because I've forgotten them.
What?
I've said I've forgotten them. I remember them being good, but I have forgotten the details. So,
all right.
Absolutely, they will be good.
Well, do we want to end with it? Like, should I talk about my draft first? Or...
Yeah, sure. Talk about
draft. Yeah. Didn't you already talk about your draft? Oh, your modern draft. Okay.
Yes, my modern draft.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting shit.
Yeah, so there's the pros. I think it's the coverage team who kind of actually started to do like this, like, posted online modern rotisserie draft. So essentially you're drafting a 40-card deck. You get 42 picks. You can take any card in modern that is not on the ban list. It's one of card. And we just kind of built it up with a whole bunch of the sickos from Edmonton.
And, like, you're drafting it, right? You're not playing, like, standard. You're, like, you get one of this card.
Yes, you get one of, yes. So once it's been drafted, it's a rotisserie draft. And rotisserie drafts are usually done with a set or a block. You lay everything out on a table. You take a card. Everybody sees what everyone's picking because it's done in that face-up style.
Right.
And it goes with wheeling. So first player gets his pick. Eighth gets to take two picks, and it goes back the other direction. So it does, like, the snake wheel style.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So it started off with Doug Potter, and he kind of, like, took Lightning Bolt. That was the pack one, pick one, the first pick of the entire thing.
Yeah,
it was very interesting.
Wrong. Like, that's a strong pick, I guess. I don't know if it's the best pick.
I don't know. I think it's a very, very strong pick. Snapcaster
like
Mage.
Like, P1, P1?
Yeah, P1, P1 of the entire draft. Like, what do you pick over Lightning Bolt?
I don't know. Like, I guess it kind of depends. Like, is Snapcaster better than Lightning Bolt? No.
I don't think so. I think Lightning Bolt is just so good.
Like, Liliana of the Veil?
Yeah, like,
I guess. Strong. Like, I don't know. I don't know, actually. That's a good...
Like, my pick one is probably the worst pick one out of all the pick ones.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so the pick ones were Lightning Bolt, Snapcaster, Click, Liliana, Path, Thoughtseize, Sword of War and Peace, and Noble Hierarch.
Okay.
So which one do you think was the worst pick there?
The worst out of all of those?
Yeah.
Probably the sword?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That was the one I picked.
Yeah.
And when I actually made that pick, my game plan was I'm going to get the Noble Hierarch on the way back. And I'm going to build, like, some sort of crazy humans allies deck that I'm going to play with some of the new cons cards that give abilities to people who have +1/+1 counters, because all the allies get +1/+1 counters really easy.
Sure.
I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then on the wheel, because I was on seventh pick, eighth pick went Noble Hired Bitter Blossom, which I thought was like, for your two first cards, that's just like obscene in my mind. Because it's like you have Noble Hierarch that can't cast Bitter Blossom, and then you go right into Bitter Blossom. So
yeah,
just
that's like a this, very like, bizarre pick.
Yeah, like it was really, really weird. He ended up building a Jund deck, so it kind of made sense, like an aggro Jund.
Sure, yeah, sure.
I came back to me, I didn't know what to go with, so I just picked Batterskull, because again, I could keep myself nice and open. It swung back where we saw somebody kind of go into heavy discard, we saw a white player kind of emerge, we saw kind of a black-green because an Abrupt Decay went. Cryptic Command went with the Cleek, so you kind of saw, like, okay, there's our control deck. A Hall of Fountain went with the Snapcaster Mage, so that was just, like, an immediate, like, okay, I'm playing a blue-white type thing. And then Doug, who had picked Bolt, went with a Goblin Guy Grim Lava Master, kind of, like, really saying, okay, I'm the fun police.
Yeah.
So the draft kind of played itself out. One of the things that didn't happen in this one, a lot of people thought that either Bisou or myself would have went, like, and locked ourselves into combo. Like, if Brian Sue had gone and went with a Kiki Jiki and Splinter Twin as his, like, first two picks, like, as his, like, eighth pick wheel, then he pretty much locks himself into, like, some sort of crazy twin deck.
Right.
But we did end up with, like, Doug's deck is kind of the, it's almost mono red, but it has a splash white for Lightning Helix and Wear and Tear and Burrow's Charm, and then it's got green for, like, Tarmogoyf and Flint Hoof Boar, Mutagenic Growth, Become Immense, so it's got a little bit of that kind of stuff.
Right.
We have like an Esper control that also has the Gifts Ungiven Umbrella Rites combo in it. We have a just like straight Esper control type thing. The control that has the Umbrella Rites is actually more of like a blue white red control. Matt Kirkland, he went with Esper control. We have a very 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 strong green black deck in the mix, which is kind of scary looking. The mono white deck kind of turned into a white green Hate Bears deck. The discard deck turned into a blue black mill deck. My deck ended up turning into Tezzer Agent of Bolas, so I just went like Tezzerator.
Right, okay.
And then Bisou ended up having the Aggro Jund deck, and we're literally three picks away from the whole thing being done.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you got the Wormcoil Engine yet?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Wormcoil Engine, I was able to pick up in the, 7th round. So I think I did pretty good there.
Did you get the Kuldotha Forge Master?
You know what? I did not take Forge Master.
Okay.
I didn't feel like I had enough artifacts.
Did you get Inkmoth Nexus?
Yes, I have both Inkmoth and Blinkmoth.
Sweet. And and you have Darksteel Citadel, too?
I do have the Darksteel Citadel, yes.
Okay, good. Okay.
I'm deciding with my last pick if I'm taking, like, an Opal, if whatever the case. One of the things we did, though, is when we hit our 20th pick, we actually made it so that you did two picks at a time to kind of speed up the draft.
Okay.
So when that hit, on my comeback, I did, like, a Talisman of Dominance, and then I took an Urza's Tower. So I gave one guy four picks because he had his four picks because he got his two picks and then he got his wheel and got two more picks. I gave him the opportunity to see if he was going to steal if the Urza things. Honestly, like if I get stuck with one Urza's land, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But I did manage to pull the rest of the Urza lands.
Wow.
So I got the full set of Urza land. So I had to like snap the Karn after that. I ended up taking it again.
Did you end up taking the artifact basics?
No, because they're on the
banned. They're banned in modern.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because
shows you how much I know about modern.
Yeah, affinity would be even way more absurd.
I guess that's true, isn't it?
Yeah. So where I'm at right now is I have the Sword of War and Peace, which probably won't actually see any play. Batterskull, Spellskite, Tezzeret Agent of Bolas, Dismember Smother, Wormcoil Engine, Go for the Throat, Victim of Night, Engineered Explosives, Inkmoth, Blinkmoth, an Ulamog. Forbidden Alchemy, Blue Sun Zenith, Grand Architect, Everflowing Chalice, Solemn, Thirst, Ethereum Sculptor, Treasure Mage, Talisman of Dominance, Urzatron, Karn, Dimir Signet, Mindstone, Academy Ruins, Expedition Map, All is Dust, Witchbane Orb, Ugin, Mistfang Border Post, Darksteel Citadel, Phyrexian's Court, Bury Ruins, a Tezzeret, a Chief Engineer, Trading Post, Spine of Isha, and my last pick, I'm thinking I might actually take a Pillipala.
What's the combo with Pillipala?
With a Grand Architect, it's infinite mana.
Right. Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah. So that's kind of a thing.
Sure.
But I have a lot of like open options in this spot. Like, it's actually kind of absurd. I'm even thinking that if I don't do the Pilipala thing, which is kind of a cute thing to do, the Pilipala thing, I could just take like a Fabricate instead.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, so I have the Fabricate. I could do like Mindslaver to try and do like crazy Mindslaver locks. I could take a Mox Opal, Mirror Retriever.
Mox Opal, actually, I really like.
Yeah, it just, if it's no good, it's really no good.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's still zero cast and costs 5/5.
It could be. It could be.
Yeah.
So, but it's like, do I just take in Soul Artifact instead?
Ooh, that's also just,
that's also good. Actually really good, yeah. That's
or really Phyrexian Metamorph.
That's also a good card.
Oh, God. That hasn't been taken yet?
No, nobody took Metamorph.
Then, like, Snap-Take Metamorph. I just think you should just stop and Snap-Take Metamorph. Because I feel like that's going to be as good as the best card in your opponent's deck, or the best card in your own deck, and you absolutely can tutor it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to tutor that is very good, I think.
Do you have Ratchet Bomb?
No, Ratchet Bomb is also not taken. So Ratchet Bomb might be good against some of these.
Engineered
like,
Explosives got taken?
I took Engineered Explosives.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I did get that. But my deck isn't really capable of making an Engineered Explosives for anything past 2.
Yeah. I mean, you see the other decks, you're going to know what's good against them, right? So.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, is that nobody's actually got big stuff except for the black-green deck, and the black-green deck, I think I just have to get really lucky. Like, I just got to be able to Ugin them or something.
Yeah.
Get a Spine of Isha lock going on.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. Or that might be just, like, where it's, like, he does have some removal, but maybe I can, like, sneak through some sort of, like, Blue Sun Zenith combo kill.
Sure. So.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yes, so that's kind of what's going on with that. I actually was looking at it, and I was trying to think, like, what could I do that would be really fun with it? So I'm going to talk to my opponents and see if they're willing to play me on Moto for these and maybe try and record them.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, so, like, just to kind of, like, play through the different decks and stuff like that and just kind of have some, like, of the Edmonton Sickos and see if KYT likes what it's like and if it'll be worthy of the site, and if not, then who cares? But, you know, it's good fun for me. And it's so much harder for me to actually get out and play Paper Magic, so it's something that I could easily sit down and play a match against somebody in the evening, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's really exciting. But that's kind of the last of my Magic stuff. And we do have poop stories.
Yes. So let's get the poop stories in, and then let's, we can take a pick. Who do you think's going to win the whole thing? If you want, we can pick one horse for the race, but we don't have to go deep. We'll just pick one horse.
Okay. Oh, so, yeah. Well, let's do some poop
story. Do your poop story and we'll think about it.
Okay. Okay. So this is a pair of poop stories that were sent in by a wonderful A-Team listener. Actually somebody who I have mentioned by name on today's cast. So the pair of stories is entitled Lactose Showers.
Sorry, fuck.
Finding out you are lactose intolerant is the fucking worst. Like, beyond awful. Terrible. The only conceivable positive of this dismal fate is it leads to some quality shit stories. Allow me to share the story of two showers. The first incident, I am in my early 20s, and I have a close friend, female, who I am quite smitten for. We spend a lot of time together, and I am trying to muster up confidence to go for it. She spends a lot of time at my house, I spend a lot of time at her house, and all signs are pointing to yes. Her parents invite me over for Saturday night movies and games one night, and I am excited to make a good impression since I know it's my route in. I get there, and to my utter dismay, I enter the dining room to see the worst case scenario. The moment I have been dreading. Cheese fondue. I look at my beau, and she is as bewildered as I am at the imposing doom. But I can't be rude. I must not be rude. She is the one. I chow down on some cheese, and my stomach is instantly begins to wrench. my intolerance is more like an intestinal fuck you motherfucker. And with each bite, I foresee the blight that will soon be eclipsing my sphincter. After what seems like a reasonable amount, I say I am full, and the mother insists I eat more. So I swallow a few more bites of this nauseatingly delicious cheese.
Oh my god.
When I think I'm in the clear, the cheesecake is brought out. I must not be rude. And I choke down more than even the most self-loathing lactard would dare.
How is this?
The meal is done, and my volcanic anus is about to implode.
They bring out cheese. I say no, but they insist. So they bring out more cheese. I say no. They insist. I must eat it. What the fuck? Okay, keep going.
The parents clear the table and sit down to play cards, and I can tell they are in for the long haul. But my femme d'amour is giving me smiles and laughs that I know I can't live without. I play it cool, sweat beating my brow as I know I just must escape to find a swift evacuation. A sweet, sweet porcelain purge. And then back to schmoozing. But it dawns on me. The closest toilet is right there, 5 feet away from the kitchen table. Simply around a corner, but nowhere near far enough from the blast radius that will be my bowel's total annihilation. I panic and don't know what to do. Every ounce of energy in my body is used to tighten my asshole and clench my stomach. I feel so bloated and ready to pop that I may as well have been dilating 10 centimeters.
Oh my god.
The most excruciating 5 minutes pass until my saving grace is presented. The father gets up and heads into the bathroom. This is my chance. I get up and ask where another washroom is and told that it is upstairs on the right. I rush up, jumping 3 steps at once. I feel as if I won't possibly make it, and I'm already undoing my belt and preparing for backsplash. I swiftly shut and lock the door and run over to the toilet, slam down the seat, drop throw, and begin sitting down when disaster. As my butt cheeks hit the seat, I can feel the warmth of my mistake. I know that I didn't fully make it, and I knew that the worst had happened. After the grueling flight was won, and the 3 pungent flushes were over, I stood up and surveyed the damage. Soupy shit was everywhere. All over the seat, in the crevices between the seat and the bowl, everywhere. I had managed to avoid it all, but I didn't know what to do. I thought fast and turned the shower on for cover. I began scooping, scraping, seeking out every inch, and using wet toilet paper to cover my tracks. I found some perfume and sprayed the toilet. I found some toothpaste to freshen up the white bowl. After 20 long minutes, I felt convinced that my evidence was all hidden. Now to finish my cover. I quickly stuck my head under the shower and got my hair all wet. Turned the shower off, waited 1 minute, and decided, and went downstairs. Trying to explain how I took so long since I decided to shower was the single most awkward thing I have ever done. And needless to say, the night ended swiftly after. Things didn't work out with this golden girl, but I guess it could have been worse. At least she didn't find out that my shower lie was more shameful than she could have ever realized. This may be the longest of the longer of the two stories, but it's certainly not the shittiest.
Oh, God.
All right. So the next one here was, one fateful day, I'm alone at home and decide to order 2 pizzas. It was one of those days where fuck the world, I'm going to binge. At this juncture in time, I had learned my lactose limits, and I also knew that it was something sometimes made me throw up as well as lava poo. So after a few pieces, I just craved more. Maybe it was because I was watching season 3 of Heroes and hating life itself, or maybe it was because I had lost in yet another PTQ quarterfinals. But today, I was finishing my pizza. Slice after slice, regret after regret. When I was all said and done, I knew I was T-minus an hour before D-Day, and that deuce day was going to be pretty pretty. I changed into my pajama pants so that I could breathe, and I sat there. In no time, everything I expected was coming true, and my stomach was churning and curdling. I had managed to get comfortable, though, and fell asleep on the couch. I woke up, as many of us have before, eyes bulging out of my head as I realize I'm about to throw up. I get up and begin running to the bathroom, and I am in a frenzy. I am not thinking about anything except for holding in the vomit. Lactose, you cruel motherfucking devil, you. I put up the toilet seat, dropped my knees, lean over, and the moment it happened, I started to think, I kind of have to shit too. Fact, it's going to be some pretty raunchy diarrhea. I probably should have sat on the toilet and puked into the garbage. Hey, oops. As I hurled, I shat. As I shit, and the best reaction I could think of was to clench my hamstring muscles and create a nice tight seal where the back of my knees was perpendicular to the floor.
God.
I sat there gasping, spitting, and thinking. I couldn't move. As if I did, a slippery slope of slimy shit would seep onto the floor. I flushed the toilet, and I just sat there, immovable, dazed, festering in my own filth. Then I heard it. My roommate had just come home. I swallowed my pride and called out, Alex? After a delay, yeah? Could you please get me a garbage bag and a new pair of pajama pants and just leave it outside the bathroom door? Please don't ask. A long pause, and then he did it. I crawled into the garbage bag and started to crawl towards the stairs.
Oh my god!
I carefully navigated them, one hand on the back, keeping my knees bent, writhing up the stairs. I love the fact that this happened downstairs too. This is like the worst. I flopped into the shower, turned on the water on myself, and then stood up. This was the saddest and nastiest shower of my life.
Oh god.
So what is the moral of these stories? If you know you shouldn't eat all of the tastiest foods in the world without a severely adverse reaction, you have two options. Jump off the bridge now, or get very used to the smell of your own revolt.
Oh my god.
Isn't that just like a beautiful shit story? Like, what do you say, Jay? Like, you're our master of shit stories. Those are
pretty good. Like, I just can't imagine, like, just, I'm going to eat this pizza. I don't give a fuck. But you know that you're going to puke / shit. But then you still just sit on the couch.
Yeah.
Like, I would be out in the yard or in the tub or something. And then, like, if someone was like, hey, what are you doing? I'd be like, hey, man, I ate two pizzas. You know what happens when I eat two pizzas? So, back up off me. Blah! Like, but he just sits there waiting.
Yeah, if you ever get, like, the nasty flu or anything like that, and you're afraid of, like, dual-end shooting, the trick is always sit on the toilet, puke in the tub. Like, that's...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's tier one. Like, that's the way to go about it. Obviously, you know, you kind of got the jump on himself because he fell asleep in it, so he didn't get any planning.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's a rough one. That's a rough couple.
Oh god.
I love also like just like the lengths a young man will go to for a woman. That was, you know, put in the first story.
There. How do you fall to death?
Not to mention like the whole like it almost felt like Dumb and Dumber, like the first one there, where like the toilet won't flush or whatever like that, and he's trying to cover it up, like just beautiful. Sitcom worthy.
Absolutely. That's like a movie. That was actually just like a movie. Now, how do you just do that? Like, I have some cheese. I probably shouldn't. Well, I guess I will.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just have to give a quick applause to the hero of our story here, Mr. Doug Potter. He did say I could share his name with it after the story was said.
Oh, you did!
I did double check with him, so that's wow. That's something else.
That is something else.
So I guess we'll talk about Approacher real quick and then
So there's all sorts of insane stuff coming up. I think that this is the set adds just enough to make it exciting. Specifically, I think that we're going to see a lot of really sweet decks, and there's still a bunch of cards that haven't been broken out in our standard yet that I think are still on the cusp. So I'm pretty pleased to see what could come out of all of this. Like, it could be pretty insane. Do you have a pick for sort of like who's to take it all down? What do you think?
I'm not too sure. But I want to see if Pinnacle has any prop bets for Magic.
Really? Right, they do that, eh?
They do that.
Wow.
So, oh, there we go. Magic the Gathering, Pro Tour, Dragons of Tarkir. Let's see what they got. Okay. So, Owen Turtenwald. I don't know how to read this stuff. So, let's see. It's 6.1 to 1.1 for Owen Turtenwald to win.
Okay.
Li Shitiang has got 6.69 to 1.1, too. Eric Froelich has the same. Ivan Flock, they're giving 7.2 to 1.1.
Wow.
Sean McLaren, they're giving 8.879 to 1.08. Shahar Shannar, 6.69 to 1.12. William Jensen, 6.69, 1.2. Ari Lax is like an 8.9. Jacob Wilson, 6.7. Sam Black, 7.2. So, according to this, the odds makers are saying Owen Turtenwald has the best shot.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to disagree with that.
Yeah. They're saying that they're giving like a 3-to-1 chance that anybody in the April top 10 rankings to make it. So they're saying they're only paying 3 for no. They say that somebody's going to make the top 8. And in the top 25, the odds are even crazier. The thing I'm very interested in is Mountains in the top 8.
Mountains in the top 8?
Yeah, they do over-unders.
Wow.
So over-unders, actually, they're thinking Forests are going to be the most heavily played card.
Yeah, because
the over-under is at 14.5.
Sure.
Basic Plains is at 12.5. Mountains is at 11.5. Islands is at 8.5. And Swamps is at 6.5.
Wow.
I think Plains at 12.5 is like, I think that's a really easy under bet. I might put money on this thing just to bet under that. I can't see the number of Plains. I guess you're saying, is there going to be 13 Plains in the top 8?
13. Well, okay. So if Heroic does well.
Yeah.
How many does that play? Let's see. So Tom Ross played Bant Heroic. He played 4.
Yeah. So, like, if there's, like, an Abzan Aggro, maybe on top of that?
No, they play, like, a couple.
They play a couple, yeah. So you'd need, like...
You could easily bet the 13 under on that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think under is pretty safe on that particular bet.
Yep.
Just because even the control decks aren't necessarily going to be white control decks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think 14.5 Forest, though, is kind of something I'd want to stay away from.
I wouldn't want any piece of that. I think you can easily bet on the Plains.
Yeah, Mountains also, actually. Mountains might be an easy over. Because, like, mono-red decks, like, if one mono-red deck makes the top 8, like, shouldn't
what's
that
the
just...
line? What's the line? Is it all at 14?
No, it's at 11. So one mono-red deck makes it, and you get the over.
I bet the over on that.
Yeah. Right now, you get better odds on the under, but the over is, like, 1.6.
Yeah.
So it's about the same as playing a 2-man.
It's less than that. It's less than that right now, even. It's fucking like, I saw 140.
Yeah.
I just can't wait for the queues to flip over.
Oh, when do they start paying out in Dragons?
I think it's soonish. I think it's the end. So
they're still not even paying out right now. That's terrible.
Yeah. It is rough. Admittedly rough.
Admittedly rough. Let's see. Holy jeez, that's still terrible. It was funny, I was watching Kenji, and Kenji opens up his collection.
Yeah.
And he's got like 170 like Khanza Tarkir packs, and he's just like, I'm never gonna do anything with these.
Yeah. Yeah. He just sits on them. Yeah. Liquidate them for $170.
Will a Hall of Fame member make the top 8? They're paying 4-to-1 on this, essentially. For, like, no.
All right, so let's go. Let's pick our winner.
Okay, yeah, let's.
All right, so I'll go last. I'll even go last. How's that
sound? All right, I'll go first. All right, but Jer, you pick 10 choices we have. Or that I have. You guys can pick whoever you want, but I can't handle more than 10.
What do you mean 10?
10 players that I can pick from.
Oh, you need 10 players that you can pick from?
Sure. Like, I want to pick Owen, but I just feel like he's not ready.
Let's look at the top 10.
Okay.
Like, let's look at that Wizards list.
Yeah, let's do that. Is, like, Froelich ready? Like, probably not.
I don't know. Ifro's a very strong player because he's also a very strong drafter. Like, that's the thing, is that you need to have that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Top 25. What are the top 25s? As of April 2nd. Okay. So, Owen Turtenwald's in first. Li Shutang in second. Ifro in third. Ivan in fourth. Fifth is Ari Lax. Sixth is Sean McLaren. Shahar Shannar is seventh. William Jensen in eighth. Sam Black in ninth. Yuya Watanabe in tenth. Just outside of that is Reed Duke, Jacob Wilson, Seth Manfield, Paul Rietzel. You know, you kind of like a bunch of regular sickos. Haynes still in there at 24th.
Yeah, sure, I'll pick Owen. He's my boy.
Okay.
I'll pick Owen. To win it.
To win it.
Yeah, that's what we're picking right now.
Yes. Are you anchoring, Scott?
Yeah, Scott's anchoring.
I've offered to anchor.
You've offered to anchor? Okay. I gotta take Ifro.
Fucking god damn it!
Yeah, like, he's probably the next.
I think he's easily.
Ready.
I think he's ready.
I would probably take Ifro over Owen.
Like, yeah, the guy's just thinking about it.
He's ridiculous. He's so ridiculous. And then, like, we got, like, some people who have just been, like, super sicko, just crushing tournaments left, right, and center. Also, like, I don't know, like. I'm really out on this. I haven't seen what, like, any of these guys, like, they haven't been playing at any tournaments. They've all been just straight up testing. Like, Jacob Wilson played in the Invitational. He got second in the Invitational. Like, Reed Duke won the Invitational.
Yeah, like
these are guys who played in big tournaments, who have that experience. You know, they're not in the testing house, but they're in the testing house now. Like, does that give them an edge?
Yeah.
Or did they set the story for everybody else?
Right.
So, you know, winning the Invitational last week, Reed Duke, like, that puts him in a really good spot. And that makes maybe Turtenwald and Jensen better, because you know that those two guys are side by side with them, right? So, I don't know. I'm excited to watch what I can. I know that I'm not going to get to watch a lot of it just because of work and all that nonsense, but I'm going to try and watch as much as I can.
For sure.
So, I'm going to go way out on a limb here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take, like, super underdog. Okay?
Okay, who's your super underdog?
Seth Manfield.
Seth Manfield?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm, like, super underdog Seth Manfield. He has been playing fucking unbelievable Magic in the last 3 months. Has his finger firmly on the pulse of what's going on with Standard.
I would agree with that. Like, seems like he's a week ahead of everyone.
Has demonstrated admirable limited prowess, has a number of GP, at least top eights, if not, I mean, if he's won GPs, some of them are limited. Like, he is definitely a strong limited player as well. If Chris Fennell and team get a handle on the limited environment, I think Seth Manfield has what it takes to go all the way. I think it could be, like, I'm very clearly, I'm the underdog here, or I'm the, you know, I'm not the odds-on favorite here, but I have a hunch. So I'm gonna go with Seth Manfield.
Cool.
So we'll see. But anyways, with that all said and done, we have had ourselves a healthily long podcast to make up for our one that was missing. I think that with KYT not here, I'm pretty proud of how well we've done here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, let's hope that everyone hears it and that our recording software did not fail again.
Concur.
Yes.
All right. Well, with that said, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your pro tour and tune in next week. I think KYT's gone again, but we'll just do our damnedest to get somebody sweet that was at the pro tour onto the show next week.
Maybe. Yeah, let's do that. I like that.
We'll try. We'll try real hard. All right, ladies and gentlemen, say goodbye, boys.
All right.
Goodbye, boys.